Meeting of the Senate Finance Committee will please come to order. It's Wednesday, April 25th, 2012. And on our agenda today is Senate File 2391. It is involving the stadium, and Senator Rosen will be presenting the bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, members, for this hearing. I really appreciate this. Good to be here. I just want to just do a little brief summary of how we got here. And then there's several people that want to testify. I'd like to go through the bill a little bit. And for many of you that have, this will be the first time you've heard this bill. And I think it's really important to understand what's in this bill. I think there's a lot of misconceptions about the bill, but it's actually a piece that has been worked on by many over a course of 18 months to 2 years. And I actually think it's the best stadium bill we've had to date. And, you know, you look at the commitments that the state takes on, and we hold dear our lakes. We hold dear our Walker Art Museums and the Ordways and our just our quality of life. And I do believe, I'm not going to go into great detail, but I do believe a stadium in the Vikings is part of that fabric. And so we have to do something this year. This is the year to do it. We cannot delay this till next year. The lease is up for the Vikings. They are free agents, basically. And we have a 30-year-old stadium with no major tenant. And that's where we sit right now. Before you, members, you also have a survey from Mason Dixon, a very prominent polling and research company. One of the first questions is that I find very important is, based on this information, would you support and oppose a stadium financing proposal that used gambling and existing revenues along with a major contribution by the Vikings? And 61.4% said that support. I hope you take a look at that piece. It's in your packet. And just to tell you how we got to this point with this bill, there was a bipartisan working group, and Senator Bonoff was on that working group, Senator Magnus, Senator Senjum, Senator Bach at the time, and it was with the House and bipartisan over there also, and the governor's office, and it was a commitment by all three of these bodies to get a stadium proposal put together that is good for the state, good for the team, and good for a local partner. We had several criterias that we had to live within that we felt very strongly about. Number one is that there is no general fund dollars and that there are no tax increases. That's very important. We also felt strongly that there should be a local partner. So I would like to, for the record, thank Ramsey County for being the first one to step up to the plate and doing due diligence and working very hard. But it just did not work because of the other prior to commitments that we made to not having any tax increases without a referendum. And then we also, one of the commitments and one of the criteria is that the stadium must be able to be used by the entire state, which means that it has to have a roof. So our high school leagues, the Hmong Festival, the Monster Truck Bash or MASH or whatever, they can all use it. This is going to be a facility that will be utilized by the entire state. I know Fairmont High School, just the football league, just played in the dome. And that's an experience that these kids will remember for the rest of their life when they get a chance to play in the playoffs, the state playoffs, in a dome. And now we need to get something done with a dome. So I feel very strongly about having it down in and using the already existing site, too. That was one of the things that the working group decided on also, is that we need to make this a very cost-effective stadium. And I think we have by using the existing facility, and a lot of the infrastructure is in place. Chair Mondale, it will be coming up, and he'll be going through a little packet that you also have of building the People's Stadium together that will show a diagram of what the stadium is supposed to look like, how much he'll just talk through the mechanics and the finances of the issue. And we had a very good hearing yesterday in Jobs Committee, and we talked about the jobs. But today we're in front of you, Madam Chair, in your committee to talk about the financing portion of the revenue and the commitments and basically the terms of the deal. So with that, I would like to I do have some amendments that I will need to eventually get the bill into place or into the structure that is appropriate. But with that, I'd like to ask Chair Mondale to come up and just run through just a little brief summary of the bill.
Chair Mondale. Members, get out your reading glasses because this is where we look at the fine print. The spreadsheets are in front of us, too.
Madam Chair, members, it's a pleasure to be here with you today. What I'd like to do is just run through a brief high-level overview that just sort of sets in the major terms of this bill. And I believe that's in your packets. As Senator Rosen said, this bill comes from a basis of agreement that was reached by the state, the bipartisan working group of legislators, the city of Minneapolis, the Vikings, and quite frankly, the NFL. We believe that it's a financially viable solution, and one, we've been given directives along the way of what could be viable and what could pass the legislature, and we have followed those tenets for about a year now, if not more. And one of the key things is that there are no new taxes and there are no general fund monies expended for this investment. The plan, as you know, is supported by the governor, the legislative leaders, Fortune 500 companies, the leaders, the chamber, the business partnership, organized labor, and we're happy to say a majority on the city council. So we have to adjust these at time. We just had Mayor Ryback and Council President Johnson a while ago, but glad, and I know that the mayor had a good vote yesterday. One of the key tenets was that the Vikings would put in a majority of the money into this facility. And as you'll see, and I'll run through a couple finance charts, the Vikings pay over 50% of the total life cycle cost of this facility. The lease in the Senate bill now is for 40 years with extensions up to another 10 or maybe 20 years. So it would basically lock the team into Minnesota for another generation. And the team, there's a provision in here much like the similar somewhat to the Target Center, where if the owners sell the team early on, that the state would receive a benefit, a windfall, if you will, if there's increased profit to the team. I move to the next page, and Senator Rosen talked about this. When you're thinking about this facility and you remember the year where the dome roof went down, it is incredibly important in this state, given our weather, that we have a fixed roof, fixed climate facility that can facilitate the kind of civic sports and other events that are important to our state. Baseball, soccer, football, all of these things are carried on in the dome today, that's running sometimes up to 18 hours a day with civic events. And the way this is structured is this facility would run much like the dome, so that in essence, if you think about it, the Vikings, for all practical purposes, are really subsidizing the ability for our youth sports and other civic activities to be able to play in a fabulous facility at a reasonable and affordable cost. The employment impact, and we had a lot of testimony yesterday in the Jobs Committee. These numbers are from Mortenson. The direct jobs for this facility would be 7,500 construction jobs, and a total net over the time period of 13,000 additional jobs. Those obviously are temporary until they're built. And with the operations, which includes people working there, security folks, people in hotels, et cetera, there'd be another 3,400 jobs created. Now, we think today the number is probably 2,800 in the dome and going down because we don't have the number of events that we used to get, like a Final Four and regional NCAA championships and other things. But we think that number will go up over time. If you move to the next page, just to get an idea of what the site plan is, if you look at the purple oval, that's where the existing dome sits today. The stadium would be pushed back to the back of the parking lot, which would allow for a very big plaza, and then there's a couple of parcels in front of the stadium. So you'd have a very big open parcel, room for tailgating, an incredible game day experience, which Mr. Bagley will talk about later. The stadium will be owned and operated by the Stadium Authority, which is basically a state entity. And the authority and the Vikings will work together to design and construct the new stadium. and that the city and the Vikings are responsible for the operational costs and the capital repair costs over time. And the way this is situated today, we believe that we can limit the amount of time that the Vikings play at TCF Bank Field to 1 year and possibly less. But we think 1 year is a good number. So we think we have a good solution to the financing here. If you look at the next slide, page 7, the Vikings investment is $427 million. The state bonding would be $548. That's a combination of the state $398 and the city $150 as it comes to capital. The Vikings have agreed to $13 million a year, 63% of the operating costs, and the city is in for $7.5 million a year. The team then pays 63% of the operating costs for those 10 games. They also have, I will note, a exclusive for 5 years to bring in a Major League Soccer team. So these numbers would vary somewhat, but a soccer franchise might be 18 dates.
Chair Mondale.
Yes, Madam Chair.
How ironclad is the are the figures here for the Vikings so that I know that they're depending upon naming rights and seat licensing and a variety of things, a package that they're also putting together on their side. If those don't raise the revenue that they anticipate, are they still bound by these figures?
Madam Chair, yes. The way this bill is structured is that we tried to keep the public out of the business of running a professional NFL team. As we know, government's not good at marketing. There's been attempts at taking naming revenue, like in Denver, and the naming rights went way down. So the Vikings are in for the 427. The Vikings are committed to the $13 million. And if they're not successful, if the naming rights don't come in, that's on them. If the personal seat licenses are short and the estimates of what they might be able to get, or they may not even decide to do them, that's on them. So there's no – these numbers for the Vikings are hard.
Senator Hand.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Mr. Mondale, just a couple of questions. Early in your testimony, you said that this bill represents an agreement between the NFL and the team and the state. Who is speaking for the state in this agreement that has been made?
Chair Mondale.
Madam Chair, Senator. We, as much as anyone, realize that the legislature has to approve it, and they have a lot to say about what this is. But you can't bring a bill through unless you have, you know, we have a 20-page operating agreement that touches all the basic principles that would come up in a facility like this through the design, the construction, the operations over those 30 years. So that we could make that available to you. And obviously this bill has altered some from that agreement. But it's pretty tough to put a bill together unless you know what the base understanding of all the parties are. So, Madam Chair, we had a bipartisan working group. We worked very closely with the authors. We had the governor's office. And then we worked with, obviously, the city of Minneapolis, the team, and the NFL.
Senator Hand.
Thank you, Mr. Mondo. Thank Madam Chair. You also mentioned that this was a 40-year lease and that I believe the financing is over 30 years. Is that still correct in the bill?
Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Senator Hand, the 40-year lease was amended on in local gov. So the original bill was a 30-year lease. It was amended to 40-year lease by Senator Cruz. I'm not sure if the funding has been extended to 40, or there is an amendment. We have some amendments coming. There is an author's amendment to take it to 40.
Madam Chair, and to that point, the Metrodome is 30 years old, and everything I've heard says that that facility is not even repairable, and clearly the team doesn't want to use it. Is the facility that you're proposing going to be in use in 40 years?
Chair Mondale.
Madam Chair, Senator, the major problem with renovating the dome versus building new, and we did a study of that and found the difference between building new to meet modern-day NFL requirements and where it is today would be a $45 million difference. So, you know, you'd have to carry 30-year-old boilers and put them in a space somewhere. It didn't make any sense. So the major issue is basically the size of the stadium is only 900,000 square feet, where a modern facility is 1.5 million square feet. So can we look forward 30 years and know what the requirements will be? No, we can't. But there'll probably be more, less the size of the facility and more some kind of technology needs or scoreboards or something like that. But we believe that this facility is state-of-the-art. It's the right size. I can't look forward and tell you what the changes would be, but I can't imagine having a facility much bigger than 1.5 million square feet.
Madam Chair,
Senator Hand.
What I'm trying to get at is, if you're proposing a financing package over 4 years, I'm just wondering if the asset is going to last that long, or is it going to be out of use before the financing term is up? Are you saying that the stadium is still going to be used by the NFL, by the football team, in 40 years or not? And if we're financing it over 40 years, how does that reconcile?
Chair Mondale.
Well, Madam Chair, Senator, the financing of the construction of the stadium is over a 30-year period. The original bill had a 30-year, and the agreement we talked about had a 30-year lease and options to renew 4 or 5 year extensions of the lease. This was, as Senator Rosen said, extended to 40 years, and she's going to have an amendment to have the funding for the operations extend another 10 years. So obviously, you know, where many of these facilities fail and where the public gets left holding the bag, see the Target Center, is they get all excited about building the facility and they don't think about the fairly significant costs in operating them. I think that we've done a good job of foreseeing what those costs are, and that the way this bill is structured, that we have those revenues in place.
And Madam Chair, and Mr. Mondale, to that point, what are the operating costs on an annual basis for the stadium, and what is the revenue that will come into the commission from the use of the stadium, and what does that look like? What's the cost? What is the operating revenues that are generated by the use, and what is the net revenue as a result of the use of the stadium?
Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think these are all very good questions, and if we could allow Chair Mondale to finish his presentation, I think it will address some of your questions, Senator Hand. And we certainly have a great lineup, too, to talk about operating costs and the revenues coming in. And we'll.
Yes, I do believe most of that will be included in the presentations.
Well, Madam Chair, to that point, Senator, if you go to page 8, we believe that the annual operating expenses will be $20.5 million. We think there'll be, and we think that the authority will generate, on a good year, about $2 million a year in revenue in non-Viking-related events that would go to the authority to help pay for capital repairs and operations and whatever may come up. So the numbers are between 20 and 23, and we think that the financing plan covers that.
And Madam Chair,
Senator Hand.
Just to clarify, you said the annual operating expense is about $20 million and the annual net revenue is about $2 million?
No, the net revenue would be, Madam Chair, Senator, yeah, we think in the net operating revenue that would come back to the authority is approximately $2 million a year. So that's after operational costs, et cetera, for putting on concerts and other, if you'd call them, profitable events at the facility. And obviously those will be stronger in the early years because with a new facility, it, obviously people want to go there, big conventions, Final Four, Super Bowls. But we believe that our estimates on the operating costs are based on looking at other similar NFL facilities, and we think these numbers are good.
Okay.
But, Madam Chair, Senator, it is important. You know, most people think, oh, here's the cost of the facility. It's really important, see Target Center and the burden that the city of Minneapolis has picked up to pay attention to the operating costs, because that's where most of these facilities run into trouble down the line. And we always know when a facility runs into trouble, it's usually the public that's holding the bag. And we believe that we've foreseen what those costs would be and that they're baked into, if you will, the financing plan.
Senator Hanson. That's what I'm trying to clarify. If the revenue generated by the use of the stadium offsets the cost to operate the stadium, I take it that they don't, and that there are other revenue streams that will right. come in and pay the operating costs. Is that correct?
Right. Madam Chair, again, go to page 8 to the right-hand side. The Vikings' commitment is $13 million a year. So that is operating and then some capital reserve funds, capital repair funds. The city obligation is $7.5 million a year. And that's 6 to the operating, 1.5 to the capital reserve funds. Both those numbers are inflating in different ways. So, yes, I mean, the operations of the facility are picked up by the Vikings at 63% and the city. The state has no obligation as it relates to the operations of the facility. So the state is in for the construction, the bonding for the construction, and then out of any risk should something happen there.
But you want to proceed?
Yes. So if we go to the page number 9, the overall cost, that's the life cycle cost. So this is the construction and operations and capital. As you see, the Vikings on the investment to build are in at 427, 44%. The public's in at 56%, $548 million. The operations, the team's in for 63%, $327 million over the length of these. This is on a 30-year. And the city's in for 188, and the total contributions there, you see the team contribution for the life cycle of this facility in net present value dollars, which is really the only way to look at it, is that the team is in for 50.6% and the public is in for 49.4%.
Sure.
If you go to the next slide, and I think this is a factor of how successful the NFL is, the state is returned in net present value dollars $140 million more over the 30-year period than they put in. And that's really a factor of the NFL is so successful and the players just happen to make so much money. So the income taxes, that number is brought up with income taxes and sales taxes that happen within the building, not, you know, what happens at the local hotel or not what happens at Hubert's. It's really a function of revenue that's within that building. So the hole, if the Vikings were to leave, the hole in our general fund budget would be about $20 million a year. And keep in mind that these salaries have been inflating at 8%, and with the new television agreement, which is really the basis generally for how they pay the players, we continue to see that trend going forward. So we think this payback to the state, a net present value of 140, overall over the 30 years of $450 million more than the state put in, is a conservative and good number. For instance, the player salaries in this were pegged at 5% rather than the recent 10-year trend of 8%. So that's something to keep in mind as you're looking at that. And last but not least, we have a picture of what artist rendering of what the facility would look like. This is going to be a great facility. It's going to be a great civic asset. We believe that the financing plan is fair. We believe it's equitable. We believe it fits the needs of what we want as a state, as a civic asset, and to have a team here that can be competitive financially with the teams that they play on the field. So we're excited to bring this forward to you today, and we stand for any questions that you may have.
Senator Magnus.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Senator Mondale, I have a question about the cost of the facility. I know our best guess is $975 million, and the question I have is, what about cost overrides that would come up?
Chair Mondale.
And who pays those?
Madam Chair, the way the bill is set up today is that the state authority would construct the facility. But there's also language in there that says, should the team and the authority agree, the Vikings could take on that construction. You know, they're in the real estate business, so they built things.
Right.
What's important in these things is that whoever has the risk has the authority to make the decisions. Because the bidding process will be, and I know I don't want to get into the merits of light rail, but this is similar to that, in that there will be a fixed budget, and we will go to bid with a fixed budget. And the budget for this is $975. If the best bid comes in at $1 billion, then we need to find $25 million out of the project to take out to be able to fit that number. So it'll be a fixed bid, not to exceed project. With if the state is built, if the authority is building it, then the authority has the risk. But really the risk is what's all included in the building.
Senator Magnus.
Well, Madam Chair, and I bring this up for several reasons, but one of them certainly was the agreement we had with the Twins, where we insisted that the Twins pay the override costs, and we did that for some reasons. I certainly agree with you, Mr. Mondale, that that we need a venue. If we're going to do this, we need a venue for the team to be successful. Otherwise, why go down this road? The team needs to be successful. In the case of the Twins, for example, as the construction was going, some things come up, they, for several reasons, decided to spend an additional $49 million, according to Mr. Jim Polad, who I talked to about this. Of the Twins, an additional $49 million to get the stadium that they felt they could succeed with and not go back to the city, the state, and others. And so that's the arrangement that was there, and, you know, that's my thoughts about going up here. I want the team to be successful if we are going to do this, and what might be successful in their eyes may not be successful in someone else's eyes, especially if they're paying the bill, if that other entity is paying the bill.
Members, the section we're referring to is on 14.19 to 14.27. Chair Mondale.
Well, Madam Chair and Senator, Twins Field, Target Field, is a... You described it accurately. It is a single-use facility.
Right.
The team runs
right.
it. I mean, I think they're talking about a Paul McCartney concert or something there. But generally, it's a baseball field for the Twins. And it was at the team's discretion that they added cost to the facility. You'll note in the language, and I don't know exactly what page, is there's discussion of, well, you know, maybe a retractable roof would be a good thing. But that needs to be within the budget. If there's things that the Vikings want that are outside of the budget, they would have to pay for them, like a retractable roof, or it won't be in the design. So that's the way this is configured today. And I think it's really, you know, let's just say you have a $10 million shortfall. Are you going to take the baseball locker rooms out, or do you scope down a scoreboard? I mean, that's the kind of discussions that that would happen when you get down to it. Now, a few years ago, the sports facility and the team spent a good deal of money, time, and effort to really design the stadium. So there's a stadium design that gets almost down to the carpet and certainly the kind of facilities that would be in there to make sure that it is a multi-purpose stadium. So we're working off a pretty good base of information when we went out to the market and priced this. So we don't think a year down the line we're going to come back and say, hey, we need baseball locker rooms, because all of that is in the basic design that was priced out by Mortensen and others.
Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Perhaps I'm looking for some advice here, but should I just do a real brief summary of the bill? I mean, I know Chair Mondale went through a little bit of a flyover, but some of those questions that perhaps are coming that are very legitimate questions, I can address just in the brief summary of the bill.
That would be helpful. Senator Bonoff, did you have a quick question?
Madam Chair, and I'm willing to wait with this question, but
when Chair Mondale made that that comment about it depends on who's got the risk, then it raised the question to me also, what if there is a situation where costs come in less? What happens to that money? The way you spoke about it as a fixed cost made me think that that we're not giving enough incentive to contractors to come in at a lower cost. And if they do come in at a lower cost, how does that affect the sharing of that revenue or money, saved money?
Madam Chair, that would be a really great thing if that happened. It doesn't happen much, as we know, but it would be a decision between the team and the authority as to, are there other amenities that you might want? Is there another block you might buy? Is there, you know, are there additional things? Do you put the money into capital? But, you know, that is something, so that is the way the bill is structured today.
Madam Chair.
Senator Bonner.
I'm not satisfied with the answer. I think there's more discussion around it, but I would like to come back to it and let Senator Rosen go through the bill.
Senator Bonner, it does indicate currently in the language that if there's cost savings, that it would first be used, maybe used to fund additional stadium or stadium infrastructure as agreed to by the authority and the NFL team, if any, and then to fund capital reserves. That is the priority at this point.
Senator Rosen. Madam Chair. Yeah, thank you. So basically, as Chair Mondale said, we are establishing an authority, and the authority is going to take over all the assets, liabilities, and obligations of the Metropolitan Sports Facilities Commission, and they will report annually to the legislature. This, the design and construction stage of the stadium will be a vote of the authority required for these specific issues that they come up. The authority will operate the facility or may delegate operation duties to the NFL team or another entity. The stadium will be located on this current Metrodome site. The development and administration agreement between the team and the authority will establish minimum design standards, as the chair said, and the rights and responsibilities of the authority team, the design and construction group, and the team owner's representatives for design and construction. The authority will also authorize the team to oversee the construction of the stadium, in which case the team assumes the role and responsibility of the authority for completing the construction according to agreed-upon minimum design standards. He already went through how big it is, the 1.5 million square feet, 150 suites, 7,500 club seats, 65,000 seats in general. There will be a Hall of Fame, a retail store, concessions, a team museum, and it will also have space for the team and the authority. The city of Minneapolis will have no interest or claim to assets or revenues of the authority unless otherwise agreed upon. The city may acquire and dispose of property, make expenditures, enter into contracts, appropriate funds, and take other actions related to the stadium. And it can establish a stadium implementation committee as part of the alternative process for municipal land use and development review. The team requirements are to contribute $427 million. The first $50 million for the project comes from the team. The second $50 million comes from the state. After that, the state and the team share the costs proportionately through completion. The team will sign a 40-year lease, guaranteeing the team stays in Minnesota. There is a clawback provision requiring the payment to the state if the team is sold during the first 15 years. And if the team builds the stadium, the team will be responsible for cost overruns. The team will pay operating cost of $8.5 million per year and a portion of the reserve fund of $1.5 million per year. Each of these amounts increase annually by 3%. The revenues at non-NFL events will go to the stadium authority. The team is responsible for public cost on game and NFL event days. The appropriation bonds, which we'll get into, we have Commissioner Showalter here, can sell the bonds to net $548 million for a grant to the authority to pay the state's $398 million share of the stadium project and to front the $150 million of the city portion. That is for the first 5 years. The state will pay for the city's debt service and operating cost obligations, as I said, to 2021. And to recoup these upfront costs, the state will retain an annual stream of revenues from the city sales tax, which are the hospitality tax that are being used on the convention center, which will result in the equivalent dollar amount on a present value basis through 2056, which my amendment will adjust. The bill also bonds to be issued up to 30 years, but a shorter time is more likely the scenario, and you'll hear that discussion from the commissioners. The appropriation bonds are not GO bonds of the state, but payable from an open appropriation from the general fund. So we capture the charitable gaming revenue that was agreed upon by the entire working group and the governor's office, that would be the revenue stream that is most appropriate and has the fewest issues going forward because of our obligation to no general fund dollars or to a general tax increase. And then from there, when we capture those dollars, put them to general fund, those will be used back out for the appropriation bonds. That's how the appropriation bonds work. The general fund cost for the debt service on these bonds for the state share is offset by these gambling tax revenues that are attributable to the new electronic pull tabs and electronic bingo games. Modernization of what's already in place, what's already in state law. The general fund cost for the debt service of these bonds for the city share is offset by the state retaining the state collected convention center taxes in amounts necessary to make these payments. If the appropriation bonds are not issued, the increase in gambling tax revenues is appropriated to MMB for grants to the authority for the stadium project. And quickly, Madam Chair, the operating cost, the state will annually pay to the authority $6 million for stadium operations and $1.5 million for a capital reserve fund. Both of these amounts will annually adjust based on growth in the Minneapolis taxes, which is a range between 0% and 5%. The general fund appropriations for the operating cost and capital reserve between FY 2016 and 2021 are offset by the increase in gambling tax revenues that are attributable to the new pull tabs and bingo games, electronic. The general fund appropriations for operating cost and capital reserve for 2021 will be offset by retaining the state-collected convention center taxes in amounts necessary to make these payments. And then, as we amended the bill yesterday, we did put the percentages of the tax relief on the net receipts for the charities in the bill. I would prefer to have Commissioner Franz go through that and Mr. Tom Barrett from the Gambling Control Board to talk about how this came to be, what those figures mean. And the state will recapture the Minneapolis the city will pay $150 million in capital cost of the stadium construction, but this will be covered by the state's appropriation bonds. And the state will also capture growth in the existing convention center taxes and contribute that immediately to the new authority. The city's convention center tax revenue will be retained by the state to pay the city's share of the debt service, operating cost, and capital reserve before remitting the balance of the taxes to the city. The state will also continue to pay the debt service to bondholders and will continue to pay the operating costs and capital reserve costs to the authority. The state will recapture the amount it spent on behalf of the city between 2016 and 2021 and the time value of those state payments by retaining a portion of the convention center taxes to recapture these amounts. This provision was removed in an amendment but was put back in by myself, yesterday in Jobs Committee. Thank you. So there is another recapture that is that we have to deal with today, Madam Chair. Looking for your advice on that. But so the end result will be the state coverage of the years between during which Minneapolis pays off the existing convention center bonds are between 2013 and 2020, and the payback from the city to the state is from 2021 currently to 2046. That will be expanded to 2056. Some other things, the team must make the stadium available for amateur sports activities for up to 10 days per year during the time stadium bonds are outstanding, and the team may charge only out-of-pocket expenses for such use. The team must make the stadium available at no charge for up to 7 days per year for the Minnesota State High School League activities for high school soccer and football tournaments. The team has the exclusive right for 5 years to start a major league soccer team. And $1.3 million is annually appropriated from the general fund for a grant to the city of St. Paul for fiscal years 2014 to 2034. And also the cities of the first class may use excess local sales tax revenues for projects authorized under a special law, which have been completed to fund capital projects with a total construction cost of at least $40 million. That's a brief summary, Madam Chair, members, of what's in the bill. There are, like I said, there are some amendments that we will need to do to get this back in order. But with that, Madam Chair, I'm open for suggestions. I know Lester Bagley, Vice President of Public Affairs with the Vikings, is here. And then I mean, he may have some brief comments. I'm not sure how your time schedule is, but we have the experts here, too, on the financing part of it.
Thank you, Senator Rosen. I do have a spreadsheet that staff has put together that complements what Senator Rosen was just discussing, and we will be going through that as soon as Senator Higgins asks her question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Rosen, you said several times the team will make available this many days for whatever. I thought the authority was running this thing. Why is it not the authority is making the space available for amateur sports and whatever?
Madam Chair, the authority runs the building, and the Vikings have some dates for football. There would be soccer dates, and for a number of dates for things like a draft party like we're having at the Dome Thursday
sure.
night. But generally for 325 days to 348 days a year, it will be the authority deciding which events are in that building.
So the language is just – so the terminology that Senator Rosen used, that the team will make available, is really not accurate?
Chair Mondale?
Madam Chair, yes. It would be the authority that decides what all those other dates are and which events are in there.
And then, Madam Chair, my only other question is what kind of funds from the soccer team, if we get one, how does the income from that whole deal come back to the state?
Madam Chair, I'd like to bring up Mr. Bagley to explain the soccer league. I think we have not had a discussion about how that's going to work. It's a $35 million commitment from the team. The revenues from that will also stay with the team, but the revenue, you have to think about MLS team coming in. You're going to have your hospitality industry, your hospitals. They probably are.
Right down the street.
Yeah, that's right, right down the street. You're going to have just an increase in revenue just in your bars and your hotels and going forward. So it is actually really a win-win there to have a major league soccer team in your community. Is a big plus.
But it's not, Madam Chair,
Senator Higgins,
being considered in any of the revenue and the funding that we're looking at.
Madam Chair,
Chair Mondale.
Senator Higgins, the Vikings would retain the revenue from soccer, but they would also pay all the costs. So it would not be something that would be a drag on the building. And quite frankly, it would be quite an asset. But that's how it's structured in this bill.
Before we go any further, I really want to go through this spreadsheet.
Okay.
And so, because it complements what Senator Rosen was talking about, but it really lays it out well, I believe. So this is where you put your reading glasses on, because it shows at this point the 30-year bond repayment schedules and how we are covering the operating expenses from both the Vikings and the state and the city of Minneapolis. And Mr. Gustafson will walk us through this.
Madam Chair, members, there's a pair of spreadsheets that have been distributed, and they're significantly different. The smaller one is a more familiar-looking sheet that Ms. McCoy put together, typical of a tax committee spreadsheet that is the fiscal years for the current biennium and the next biennium, 2012 through 2015. The other spreadsheet that's been distributed is on in FY14 paper that might require the rulers that are in your packet. And it comes with a number of significant caveats, which are not surprising. The fact that, as members know, we don't typically put together 35-year financial outlooks. We typically deal with the present biennium and the next biennium. But given the complexity of the bill and the significance of the fiscal issues that occur outside of the planning horizon, we made an attempt to depict the longer-term impacts. This isn't official budget scoring in the way we typically think about it. I would highlight the caveats that are noted at the bottom, the sources of information that we use to assemble this. And as anyone who's dealt with projections knows, numbers far out in the future have significantly greater margin of error than numbers in the near term. So those caveats aside, it was an attempt to convey the state fiscal impacts of the bill. Again, this isn't the finances of the authority. It's not the finances of the team, but rather what are the money flows related to the state's general fund. And so I think maybe it would be best for Ms. McQuay to walk through the more familiar four-year outlook, and then I'd be happy to walk through the more detailed longer-term outlook.
Ms. McQuay.
Madam Chair and members, the letter-sized document showing the preliminary state fiscal impact is compiled based on the revenue estimate that should be in your packet, and as well as a preliminary fiscal note that was not passed out that was done for
Madam
Senator
Chair.
Rosen's original bill.
Ms. McQuaid, would you pull that microphone up close, please?
The lawful gambling expansion, just due to the increased volume, is accompanied as well by a new net receipts tax and an elimination of the distribution. So the rates on the charities are reduced, and that brings in $40.8 million in the first biennium and then $118 million in the second biennium. The Gambling Control Board is expecting to get some increased fees based on the increased volume, and that brings in approximately $1.3 million each year. Public safety is going to receive some reimbursements from the Special Revenue Fund for background investigations one time in 2013 at $20,000. There is also in the bill on page 14 the sale of commemorative bricks, and at this point revenue has not been able to estimate that impact. Beginning in fiscal year 2016, so it's listed on this sheet but shows zeros because fiscal 16 is in the out years, and Mr. Gustafson shows it on his spreadsheet, but the box suites 10% surcharge will begin to bring in about $1 million each year. The expenditures begin with the debt service on the appropriation bonds beginning in fiscal year 14 at $14.6 million and $34.9 million, and that does grow and then begin to stabilize after that. The other expenses are the operating expenses, and this begins in fiscal year 2016 and goes through fiscal year 2021, and those are the operating expenses that the state is paying on behalf of Minneapolis for the first 5 years. Those expenses are coming out of the lawful gambling, and that is the same as the capital expenses. There is two appropriations for compulsive gambling to the Gambling Control Board and I believe the Department of Human Services. On line 28, there's a St. Paul appropriation for sports facilities beginning in fiscal year 14 for 10 years, I believe, at $1.3 million each year. And then there's an appropriation through the Special Revenue Fund to the Gambling Control Board for some increased costs that they're going to be incurring. The bill also sets up a structure that allows for any excess in the revenues from lawful gambling after expenses are paid, according to this spreadsheet, to be reallocated for debt service to pay back the general fund if the Minneapolis Convention Center tax is insufficient, and also goes to pay off the early payoff of bonds. And that recapture is just a net of the expenses subtracted from the revenue. That shows up as $40.4 million in the first year, $42.495 in the second, and $22.210 in the next year. Mr. Gustafson's spreadsheet goes on to show what it would look like over the 35 years. Then following those calculations, the St. Paul River Center amendment that was added in Jobs Committee is a straight general fund appropriation of $43 million for bond defeasance in fiscal year 14, and also has a loan forgiveness schedule set up that begins in fiscal year 12. And those are direct expenses to the general fund. And so on line 43, you can show it shows the general fund impact, and those expenditures add up to just the St. Paul River Center expense. And then the total special revenue fund is impacted by the Gambling Control Board fees, as well as some of their employee expenses. And then the all funds line is on line 45. Madam Chair, that completes the preliminary state fiscal impact.
Senator Stump.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Ms. Shelby. What was the debt service on the appropriation bonds based on? What was the volume? I noticed in the bill that there was quite a range from $548 million to $650
million. Madam Chair and Senator Stump, the net, what the bonds are supposed to net is $548 million. And what we're allowing MMB to issue is up to $650 million, and that's to cover costs associated with a bond issue. And so what this debt service reflects is a $650 million bond issue. That may be lower, but that's what's incorporated right now. And I'll also note that the appropriation bonds, MMB is assuming that they're taxable, and MMB is also assuming that they are 30-year bonds.
Senator Magnus.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I see on line 13, the box suites surcharge begins in 2016. And I'm wondering how much that is. What's the estimate of what that income will be?
Madam Chair and Senator Magnus, if you look at the the revenue estimate, it's on the last page. It's not incorporated into the table in the front because it doesn't begin until fiscal year 16, but they're anticipating about $1 million a year.
What?
After 2016. Okay.
Is she calling this the revenue estimate?
I think we'd like to go through the longer-term spreadsheet as well.
Madam Chair, members, the longer spreadsheet, you need to flip the orientation because the years are down the left-hand side and the issues included are across the top in columns, lettered columns. The fiscal years are in the run vertically down the left-hand side. And so picking up from where Ms. McCoy left off, the moving from left to right, column A is the revenue department's estimate of new net general fund revenue. And so the years through 2015 match Ms. McQuay's numbers, and you see then to Senator Magnus's point in 2016 that number goes up by $1 million because of the inclusion of the suites tax, box suite tax, and then important caveat that without longer term projections, these numbers are assumed flat in perpetuity. I'm gonna skip over columns B through E for a moment to move to column G, which is the debt service payments. And as Ms. McCoy's spreadsheet has, the first 2 years of that, you see then in the third year in 2016, the full annualized cost of what are assumed to be two separate bond sales, but the full annualized cost ramps up and stays there. Beginning in 2016. Skipping a couple of columns and moving to column J, again in 2014, you see the beginning of the stream of payments to the City of St. Paul for sports facilities, and you see what was noted previously is the appropriations to the Department of Human Services and Gambling Control Board And so you see then in the current biennium and the succeeding biennium through 2015, our typical budget planning horizon, the costs are much more modest because of the fact that much of the some of the revenue and much of the expense hasn't fully ramped up. And then in column N, you see the residuals of the revenue minus the expenditures, and that's the reallocation that Ms. McQuay noted to a variety of reserves and potential resource to repay the bonds early. But column N is a calculation of the difference between revenues and expenditures. And in Article 2, Section 1, Subdivision 9 is the structure to reallocate to these accounts. Column O then is what Ms. McQuay noted as the loss of general fund revenue for St. Paul River Center loan forgiveness, the 2014 appropriation of $43 million to the city for bond defeasance, but those are not in the current bill structure from the revenue raised in the bill, but rather are an impact to the general fund, which is in column P. And so then I'm gonna jump back as we move through time to 2016, column H and column I, fiscal years 16 through 20, as Ms. McQuay noted, for the first 5 years of the operation of the new facility, the state is paying operating expenses of $6 million a year and a payment to a capital reserve fund of $1.5 million a year, both with 3% annual inflators. These have been described as city expenses, but because of the city's current commitment of convention center taxes to outstanding bonds, the state pays all of the debt service, all the operating costs, and all the capital reserve costs through 2020. In fiscal year 2021, row 10, column B, you see the additional revenue to the general fund, which is the state retaining portions of the Minneapolis taxes to recoup on a present value basis, as Senator Rosen noted. The column B is retaining on a present value basis the state fronting of the city's debt service payments. Column C is retaining on a present value basis the state's payment of the city's share of operating expenses in the capital reserve. And then you see columns D and E match columns H and I in fiscal years 2021 and beyond. And that is because that's the notion that the city taxes are covering those expenses, and this is essentially a pass-through, that the state is making the payment to the authority but retaining a like amount of city taxes to cover those expenses. Members, I would just point out that structure then continues until 2034, which is the last year of the City of St. Paul sports facility grant, and then through 2043 with the final payment on debt service, and the retention of city taxes expire at the point that those resources equate on a present value basis to what the state fronted in the first 5 years of operation. That's a lot of rows and columns, Madam Chair. I'll stop for questions. But that's what we attempted to do. Again, many caveats to some of the data, but wanted to try to convey the structure of the finances in the bill.
Senator Hamm.
No, thank you, Madam Chair. And I do have a couple of questions, but I guess I would ask the Chair to I think it would be helpful to go through this bill section by section, since there are a number of questions that as I'm trying to read and follow this discussion that are being raised. But perhaps our analyst can just, with respect to the spreadsheet, we're talking about general fund revenue and general fund expenses, but I'd understood from the presentation that this was not an obligation on the general fund. And I would like to have some explanation of how those things are reconciled. And you did mention this retention of this arrangement with the city where we would pay the cost and then they would reimburse. And in the event that the city didn't reimburse, who's on the hook? Is it the state or the city or who? Could you just give us a little more detail on how the general fund component, as you display in the spreadsheet, even though there was discussion earlier that says the general fund is not going to be paying the cost of this project?
Madam Chair, Senator Hahn, the bill directs the deposit of revenue to the general fund and directs the payments from the general fund. And the debt service appropriations are, as an appropriation bond, creates an open appropriation from the general fund to make those debt service payments. That appropriation, however, is subject to the purview of the legislature in the future. Lawful gambling taxes are currently a general fund revenue, and the structure in the bill doesn't change that. It authorizes new forms of gaming that are assumed from the Department of Revenue to generate more revenue through an existing tax structure with a new assumed set of tax rates. But the lawful gambling taxes will remain in the general fund, and the payments will be paid from the general fund. There are structures in the bill, however, to try to create a structure so that the general fund, if this bill is enacted, is no better or worse off than it is under current projections. And so there is a required calculation to determine additional revenue relative to what is in the forecast now, so that the state currently collects lawful gambling taxes to ensure that the general fund receives that same amount of money as it does currently, that only the additional revenue would be determined as allowable through the calculation. However, the bill does clearly create an open appropriation from the general fund to make those debt service payments. Your question about risk, Ms. McQuaid noted this, and it's column N on the longer spreadsheet. After that calculation is made to determine is there more money after this bill would be enacted relative to current law, after that calculation is made and expenses are paid, there is an allocation to a structure of reserves. The first would be a debt service reserve to ensure that debt service payments could be made. The second reserve is a general reserve that covers a variety of risks. Among them would be failure of city convention center taxes to be at the assumed level. The third purpose of those sets of accounts would be potential early repayment of these bonds. The fourth purpose would be potential repayment of existing general obligation debt of the state.
And Madam Chair?
Senator Hahn.
Just some further clarification. So if these revenues from the gambling, let's hypothetically, this is a 40-year deal. Let's say in 10 years or 15 years, the state decides we don't want to have gambling anymore, and we outlaw gambling, and this deal is premised on those revenues. Are we off the hook in terms of paying the cost of the bonds then, or what source of revenue is going to be used to pay those bonds? And again, going back to the portion of this is going to be paid by the city, if they don't make those payments and they're not sufficient to cover the part that's allocated to them, and I'm just thinking of, I know in recent years we've had experiences with certain pension obligations assumed by the city that have devolved to the state because of lack of revenues. And I'm just wondering if the taxpayers of the state are ultimately guaranteeing this revenue, no matter what the bill may say in terms of saying that it's not going to happen, but since this is a 40-year deal, aren't we ultimately putting taxpayers on the hook to pay this cost once we make the deal?
Madam Chair, to his second point.
Senator Olson.
Thank you. Who collects the Minneapolis tax, the convention center tax? Is that not a sales tax that comes to the state first, so it isn't a matter of Minneapolis paying it? We get it first, give it back to them. So from that section of your question, I think the state has would have first claim then.
And Senator Olson, I'm just questioning if they're making a projection of revenue. If that revenue projection is not there for whatever reason, who pays the difference?
Well, Mr. Senator Olson, Madam Chair, and Senator Hamm, that was a different question. You just said if the city doesn't pay based on what the tax that they are directing in this bill would direct it. It actually, the state has their hands on it first.
And Senator Hahn, if the state were to make gambling illegal, I do think that they would have an obligation to find another revenue source if this had to be replaced because of actions of the state. I can't imagine that we wouldn't have an obligation to do that. But there is a section in the bill on page 27, lines 24 through 36, that does say that no full faith and credit, the state is not required to make appropriations. And Senator Rosen, maybe you'd like to explain that.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I will let the expert explain it right now. But just on the pension issue, that was a decision made by an outside board, it's not by the city. And also, it's kind of interesting that we are the hospitality taxes are which are paying for the convention center. The food, lodging, and liquor. And if you put a class stadium, a state-of-the-art stadium and rebuild it back in this area, you're going to see an increase in revenue coming back in because your hospitals are going to be full. It just increased vibe down there again, and it's going to generate a lot more revenue. So, but I would like to turn it over to Ms. McQuay on that very issue.
Madam Chair and Senator Hahn, the no full faith and credit that you pointed to is that the state does not have the full faith and credit behind it, and at any point the legislature can cancel the appropriation, although the repercussions of that would that the potential bond rating would of the state would be decreased.
I didn't hear that.
So, Madam Chair, we're not saying that the state is at risk, but if we don't pay the money, we are at risk? Is that kind of the deal? I mean, I can't imagine that some of these things are hypothetical. I agree. But we're projecting revenue streams over 40 years and using, in large part, gambling resources, which are not, I don't think, highly predictable over 40 years. And so if they don't come in the way that they're planned to, somebody's going to have to pay the bonds, the cost of the bonds. And if we're saying that the state isn't obligated to it, and so if we don't, then what happens? And then I understand what you're saying is that if we say, well, we had this revenue stream and it doesn't show up in the way we planned, so we're short, $100 million or whatever in a given year, we'll just not pay it. But then there would be an impact to the state. There would be an impact to taxpayers in the sense that it would decrease our ability to function in a fiscally sound way that might have repercussions. I mean, I'm just trying to get clear on this idea that we're not putting the state at risk by doing this. And I think we are. And I think we should just be honest about it and admit it. And maybe you can clarify.
Mr. Gustafson would like to respond.
Madam Chair, Senator Hahn, I think it's just important to pause and note that there are typically three types of bonds that the legislature has thought about or considered in recent years, and the most familiar are general obligation bonds, typically part of a capital investment bill that does pledge the full faith and credit of the state, and should we not be able to make payments, the Constitution authorizes a statewide property tax to pay those, full faith and credit, general obligation. A revenue bond would pledge specific revenues to the specific bond, in which case, to your point about risk, if the revenue didn't materialize, the risk is on the bondholder. Very distinct from what this structure is as an appropriation bond, that while this bill raises revenue, this bill does not pledge that revenue source to the bonds. Any appropriation bond, therefore, the risk is there is revenue risk just as there is revenue risk on any source of revenue. The appropriation and the revenue are in this piece of legislation, but they are not linked. The payments of debt service are from an open appropriation from the general fund. And similarly, members will recall the enacted tax bill from the special session that had authorize a tobacco securitization bond as well as an appropriation bond. The structure in this bill is similar to the authorized appropriation bond in that bill. You know, it hasn't been sold yet because of legal issues, but that's a similar structure. So you're absolutely right, Senator Hand, that the revenue is a projection. The appropriation of debt service is separate from those revenues.
And Madam Chair, and that's that was trying to get some clarification on it. My understanding of revenue bonds is that you link the revenue to the payment, and if the revenue doesn't show up, the bond holders are obligated for the debt. In an appropriation bond, we say we're going to assume the payment and we're going to depend on a revenue source, and if that revenue source doesn't show up or it shows up in some way that's incomplete, we as a state are still obligated to pay those debts, or we can default on them and pay the penalty to do that. But I just want to, and I, maybe you can comment as well, my understanding is that revenue bonds, because of that structure, perhaps aren't as attractive to investors as an appropriation bond because they're higher risk, and so they cost more, is my understanding. So what we're doing here, as I get it, is that we're offering a better deal, but we are putting taxpayers ultimately at risk to pay these costs, whether it's from a gambling source or other source. We are saying that the state is going to pay the bill.
Senator Rosen.
I think it would be smart at this time to get Commissioner Showalter up here to explain the difference of the rates on the revenue bonds and the appropriation bonds and why we are going this direction with an appropriation bond.
Madam
and
Chair,
have some
Senator Rosen, use your microphone.
Oops. Thank you, Senator Higgins. So if we could
Showalter.
Have Commissioner Showalter come in and explain the difference between the appropriation and revenue.
Madam Chair.
Chair Mondale.
Just say one thing to this recent conversation, that Senator Olson is exactly right, that there's no risk to the state on the Minneapolis revenue into this. The money comes to the state takes what is in this agreement. If you look at these numbers, they're pretty darn conservative because they're being run at a $650 million bond rather than $548, and they assume a taxable bond, and we believe that we can get a non-taxable bond. So that's about 0.5% on the interest payment. So these are really, and they should be, these are really conservative numbers.
And Madam Chair,
Senator Rosen.
Someone from the Goldman Sachs was here yesterday, and unfortunately couldn't come here today, and he's the one that sells all the bonds on these. He's done $150 billion in stadiums, and he absolutely thinks this could be non-taxable, and that the appropriation bonds are directly the way to go. He thought they're about 3.1%, but I will leave the commissioner to explain the reasoning on.
Welcome, Commissioner.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. For the record, my name is Jim Showalter, Commissioner of Management and Budget. The question here of taxable versus tax-exempt is, I think, one of many questions that we're going to have to sort out when we get closer to issuance. As Chair Mondale and Senator Rosen suggested, I think there's a mix of options that are available for financing this stadium. We want to make sure we're using conservative assumptions. Depending on what set of numbers you're looking at, you're either looking at taxable or tax-exempt numbers. That's not really the largest determination here. But we want to make sure, as the bill provides, we have flexibility to match the financing to the types of uses and the types of needs in the federal tax code going forward. So in recent stadium issues, there have been taxable issues that have been included. Some of them have been done with a mix of taxable and tax-exempt. So we just want to make sure we have that flexibility. I think the key thing here, as Senator Hand has been talking about, is risk management. And we've been trying to make sure that this proposal addresses that risk in a number of different ways, including the level of revenue streams that are coming into the state, including the structure and the assumptions that are used in creating those numbers.
And
Senator Hand.
Madam Chair and Commissioner, I appreciate your testimony. But again, just to be clear on this, we are assuming a revenue stream, but we're also assuming an obligation to pay out of the general fund the debt, and that's the structure that's proposed, and we're assuming that the revenue stream will be in excess of the debt, but if it isn't, for whatever reason, we are still obligated as a state under this structure to pay the debt. Isn't that the case? Or default on it and take whatever negative penalty may accrue to that. Can you just clarify that is the structure we're talking about here?
Commissioner Showalter.
Madam Chair, Senator Hand. The appropriation bond, as Brent Gustafson explained, it includes an additional sense of security for investors so that what they're buying is not just the revenue stream that we're talking about, but it is also some appropriation credit from the state. So while technically the state does not have to make payments, the legislature can take preemptive action to not appropriate funds to pay off the bonds. I think that would be a poor financial choice. I think it would be more incumbent upon the commissioner of MMB and the legislature and the governor to look for alternative revenues or to assess how to make sure that those revenue streams continue.
And Madam Chair and Commissioner, and that's what I'm trying to clarify. And I'm not by any means pretending to be any kind of expert here. But when you do full faith and credit bonding, those are typically the most attractive because what we're doing is we're going to guarantee that if the payments are needed, we're going to impose a tax to get it. And then the next level would be an appropriation bond where we're saying, well, we're going to take the money, and here's a revenue stream, but regardless of the revenue stream, we're going to guarantee that we'll find some way, even though there's not a guarantee of a tax, we'll find some revenue to pay them, so we're going to still obligate ourselves to pay it. And the third one would be this, a revenue bond that is linked to a revenue stream, and if that doesn't show up, then the bondholders assume more risk. Could you just describe generally what the differential, you know, the interest difference between those three types of bonds are, and I know they change maybe by minute, I don't know, but just generally what the contrast is between those three types.
Madam Chair.
Commissioner Showalter.
Madam Chair, Senator. Yes, we were just talking about the differential between revenue bonds and appropriation bonds, and depending on who you talk to, the moment of time, the differential is between 100 and 200 basis points. So there is certainly a level of confidence that investors have when the public entity makes it an appropriation credit versus a revenue credit. General obligation bonds, full faith and credit, are even a little bit more certain. I'm not sure the spread between an appropriation and a general fund credit, but certainly there is a general obligation credit, but there is certainly an additional surety because that is backed by the full faith and crediting, backed all the way up to a property tax of the state.
Thank you. As long as we are having concerns about the revenue stream, I think it might be the appropriate time to bring up Commissioner France and Tom Barrett from the Gambling Control Board to explain how they arrived at the figures they have as we see them on the spreadsheet.
Madam Chair, may I ask Commissioner Showalter a question?
Certainly, before he leaves. He doesn't have to leave. Senator Newman has a question for you.
Mr. Showalter, you know, the along the lines of the questions that Senator Hahn has been asking, and I'm just going to ask you to really dumb this down for me so that I can understand. As the bill is written on page 27, line 24, it says, full faith and credit, state not required to make appropriations. And I'm serious, dumb this down for me. What happens if the revenue stream that is anticipated under this bill doesn't show up for whatever reason, doesn't make any difference why, if that revenue stream does not show up and the state fails or the legislature fails to take action to appropriate the necessary money to pay for the debt service, what happens to the state state of Minnesota? I mean, what's the effect of it, you know, on us?
Commissioner Showalter.
Madam Chair, Senator Newman, the scenario, I want to just clarify one important aspect, which is the legislature already is appropriating in this bill money for debt service, both from the time that these bonds are issued, so that the appropriation is a statutory appropriation so that the Commissioner of Management and Budget, until these bonds are paid off, has the authority to make bond payments. So the legislature would have to take a proactive statement that it chooses not to make payments for whatever reason, because the revenue stream is not inadequate, for because they felt for other circumstances they wanted to stop making payments. If that were to be the case, it would be a substantial impairment of the state's credit rating. Obviously, the markets would see that as a a question of creditworthiness.
Senator Magnus.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Commissioner Showalter. You know, I think all of us are concerned about the future here, and if the funding source, we'll hear about that from the other folks there in a minute, is adequate. But my question is follow along what Senator, the line Senator Hand was talking about, an explanation between appropriation bonds, GO bonds, and my question is the cost of these. What would be the interest rate today on appropriations bonds and GO bonds, and what amount would the bond companies expect to have to back up these bonds? In other words, to sell $1 of bonds, how much do we have to pledge to get that $1 of cash in our hands?
Commissioner Showalter.
Madam Chair, Senator Magnus, we were just checking it. The interest rates obviously fluctuate daily. I think Goldman Sachs testified just yesterday that a GO rate is about at 3.1%. I'm sorry, appropriation bond is trading at around
3.1%.
3.1. We have to ask all the testifiers to really pull the mics close to their mouths because we're having a hard time hearing.
Madam Chair.
Senator
Magnus.
And so GO bonds are how much then, Commissioner? If appropriation bonds are 3.1, what are GO bonds?
Commissioner Showalter.
Madam Chair, Senator Magnus, something less than that. I'm looking to Kristen Hansen for our last GO bond sale.
True interest cost rate was about 2.76.
For the record, Kristen said 2.76, and that was the state's general obligation bond sale that we made this fall.
2.7. Okay. Mm. And Madam Chair.
Senator Magnus.
And with the GO bond, we pledge a dollar for every dollar we get back, or what do we pledge for this? For example, I noticed the I'm looking at the spreadsheet here. Mr. Gustafson has put together, and you know, we're paying out about $40.6 million a year for 29 years here. And what I'm getting at is the the cost difference between the appropriation bonds and the GO bonds, and so I'm wondering how much more do we need to sell in appropriation bonds to get the same amount of money?
Commissioner,
this is the question, Commissioner.
Madam Chair, Senator Magnus, I will take a shot at this. There's also financial advisors in the audience that if we want to get into this a little bit more, we certainly can. Just for the record, I mean, revenue bonds, you've also heard about having coverage, having more than enough revenues, being able to support those amounts. That's not what we're dealing with here in an appropriation bond. Appropriation bond is a credit where investors are looking at the creditworthiness of the state, of the plan that we're putting forward, and so there's not a pledge necessarily of additional resources in order to issue these bonds.
Okay.
Madam Chair,
Senator,
I have a representative from RBC, Corey Heppner, that could perhaps explain a little bit more about this. Unfortunately, like I said, our representative from Goldman Sachs had to leave yesterday, but
and Madam Chair.
Mr. Heppner's here.
Madam Chair, members, the appropriations pledge security is a very common security in the municipal marketplace. I work for RBC Capital Markets. We've done these bonds for the state in the past. And generally speaking, appropriation debt comes with a pledge that is one notch below the state's general obligation rating. I think you've heard testimony already indicating that the annual appropriation pledge is something that is subject to a renewal by the legislative body on an annual basis. The market is well aware of the credit structure. These are marketable securities. It happens in our space all the time, and we wouldn't anticipate any problems bringing this type of credit to support this stadium financing.
Could you identify yourself for the record, please?
Sure. Corey Heppner, director with RBC Capital Markets. and we are the largest municipal underwriter in the state of Minnesota.
Madam Chair.
Senator Hand.
On this discussion, it seems as if that if we finance this with general obligation bonds, it would be a better deal. And why don't we do that? If we are, for all intents and purposes, as near as I can understand, if we do an appropriation bond, we're on the hook, because I don't think anybody at this table is going to say that we're going to default on that and run the risk of whatever negatives may accrue to the state because we do that. And it's a better deal to use general obligation bonds. Why don't we just use general obligation bonds? And why don't we just take a better deal on this thing and save the money? Why don't we do that?
Commissioner?
Madam Chair, Senator Hand, there's a number of different reasons, and there have been a lot of discussions with Senator Rosen, Representative Lanning, representatives from multiple parties, trying to assess what are the pros and cons of different financing tools. One of the key features of appropriation bonds is also that in terms of the flexibility of the use of proceeds. For a project like this, there are private uses. There are other kinds of aspects that general obligation bonds may not be appropriate. And so the appropriation bond might be a better fit for this kind of project than a GO bond.
And Madam Chair,
Senator Hand.
Commissioner, well, can you talk a little bit about that? I mean, does this not qualify as a general obligation structure for the state? Is that what you're saying? Or maybe it does, or parts of it? Or?
Commissioner Showalter.
Madam Chair, as we're going down this line of questioning, I'm going to ask Kristen Hansen to join me as well. She's Assistant Commissioner for Debt Management and Treasury Operations at the Department of Management and Budget. The definition of general obligation bond is in statute, is in the Constitution. The uses of those bonds are pretty well defined. Appropriation bonds have different purposes. I'm going to turn it over to Kristen.
For the record, my name is Kristen Hansen. I'm the Assistant Commissioner of Treasury at Minnesota Management and Budget. In regards to GO bonding, as you know, that is dictated not only by state statute, but as well the state constitution. And the projects that qualify for that have to be public purpose, and they need to be a capital expenditure in nature. And I have a question into legal counsel in terms of the legality, but this was something that has been vetted, and we want to make sure to, you know, confirm.
Ms. Hansen, you mean to confirm that it would qualify for a general obligation bond?
To confirm that this project would or would not qualify.
Madam Chair.
Senator Hand.
Have we used appropriation bonds before for something like this?
Ms. Hansen.
Chair, Senator Hahn. The state itself has not issued appropriation bonds. There have been other agencies that have used the appropriation bond mechanism, as Mr. Heppner has mentioned in his earlier testimony.
And Madam Chair, Senator, I may add, sure, the appropriation bonds have been used on other projects where we haven't issued the debt, but TCF Bank Stadium is an example of an appropriation credit where the state has standing appropriations going to the University of Minnesota. They then use that along with their own resources to sell debt to the market as an appropriation bond, mm-hmm, shining through on the credit of the state of Minnesota to build that stadium.
And Madam Chair,
Senator Hand,
is there any legal challenges to this structure that's being proposed, or is this questionable in some way that may cause this to be in jeopardy if we go forward?
Commissioner Showalter.
And Madam Chair, Senator Hand, there are a number of legal issues around a credit issue of this size and complexity. We're trying to manage those and identify those so that, you know, just you and other members get a chance to think about those and manage those through the legislation. Included in that is the very structure of an appropriation bond, which we have a proceeding in place right now with the tobacco credits, where we are going through the validation process to find out from the Supreme Court the applicability of that tool to make sure that we can go to the markets with a clean commitment, which is unassailable by anybody. We want to make sure that we have that same kind of issue going to the market for the Viking Stadium.
And Madam Chair and Commissioner, does that mean that until we get a legal opinion that what we're proposing to do is constitutional, we will not go forward, or will we go forward and see what happens with this deal?
Commissioner Showalter.
Madam Chair, Senator, we will certainly work with our bond counsel and the Attorney General's office once that case is wrapped up to assess what's the next steps. for this issue. We certainly won't want to take an issue to market that in some way is challenged after the fact.
Madam Chair. Senator Cohen.
Madam Chair, just a couple things. First, Madam Chair, Ms. Hansen, I assume with this proposal relative to GO bonds, the fee ownership is not a concern. Is that correct? That if the building would be owned by the sports facilities, the new sports facilities commission? Is that where the fee ownership is?
That would be considered public ownership, correct? Or not? I mean, that would be part of the issue, that it has to be in public ownership to use a GO bond. One other thing I just want to point out, I think the GO bonds are only good for 20 years, too, which is another factor that we're dealing with.
That's my second question, but Ms. Hansen, then, just theoretically, because I was going to ask about the 20-year history of GO bonds, this proposal would qualify, at least insofar as the ownership is concerned, with a public entity owning it. The question is a little bit more theoretical than anything else, but...
Ms. Hansen.
Correct.
And Madam Chair, the second question is just a little bit of queasiness with what Commissioner Showalter just indicated. I thought, and obviously I'm not chairing this committee anymore, but I thought that this tobacco bond deal we came up with last year, which I didn't think was a very good idea, but I assumed that that was set. And to suggest now, months after the fact, that there's still some questions. And this isn't to doubt the ability of the agency in the least, but to suggest it takes this long to determine that, you know, raises other questions about, say, this proposal in terms of whether or not there's going to be some security to know that whatever passes the legislature, if it passes in the next few days, will meet the various tests. If we haven't even resolved the tobacco bond issue, which struck me as something a little bit more straightforward and a little bit more easily dealt with.
Commissioner Showalter.
Madam Chair, Senator Cohen, I think that uneasiness is unnecessary. Really, we cannot get that clarified until there is an issue before the courts. As you well know, courts don't take up theoretical questions. They only take up court cases that are in front of them. That's why we're bringing the appropriation bond case and the tobacco revenue bond and appropriation bond case in front of them.
Madam Chair.
Senator Rosen.
We in the working group, we probably had two, maybe perhaps three meetings where we brought in the commissioners and Ms. Hansen, and we talked thoroughly over this issue of the revenue GO appropriation bonds, the different risks going forward. The goal is to get a solid stadium bill on the table and to the floor for a vote. And I think looking at all the criteria and all those that was agreed upon, that the appropriation bond is the best vehicle. And even with the situation with the tobacco bonds and the ruling, Supreme Court ruling, we still feel that the appropriation bond would be the best.
And Madam Chair,
Senator Cohen.
Senator Rosen, did you work, and again, I have no doubt as to the professionalism and capability of the agency, and that's not just a comment relative to this agency, but when I've always dealt with the management budget. Did you deal with bond counsel as well, outside bond counsel?
Senator Rosen.
Madam Chair, thank you. Senator Cohen, we did have Goldman Sachs here, and they've been here twice, and there's been several meetings, not to this hearings, but outside.
Did you have state bond counsel?
Yes, we did. Thank you, Mr.
Senator Bonner.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I am very pleased with the interest rates that you have just quoted us. I think that it's quite remarkable when you think about it, and I'm also pleased with the differential between the GO bond rate and the appropriation rate. I had thought that there was a greater differential in terms of interest rate between the two. So a couple questions on that. First, Ms. Hansen, is that unusually narrow, the difference between the two?
Ms. Hansen.
Chair, Senator Bonoff, in regards to the difference in interest rates, for the GO bond rate that I had quoted from our sale, that is based on a 20-year rate, that 2.76. Mm. However, if we were to sell those bonds today, the rates would be lower given the market conditions. Wow. But the spread or difference between the rates from an appropriation bond and a GO bond are not substantially different.
Right, and I can just add on to what Ms. Hansen is saying. The spread compression right now between taxable and tax-exempt rates is such that you see a much tighter spread than we've historically seen. I would also just like to add one other point to what the commissioner said a minute ago. Not only did the state utilize the appropriation pledge for TCF Bank Stadium, but they've also used the pledge in the past for the Minnesota Housing Finance Agency and its homeless housing initiative. There are appropriation bonds outstanding that funded that program, and there are appropriation bonds outstanding that funded the Anderson and Freeman state office buildings that were issued through the Port Authority. So again, this is not a new concept in the market, and we just think it would be well received at this point in time.
And Madam Chair, follow
Senator
up. So these interest rates then were locked in for the life of the bonds, I assume?
Ms. Hansen?
Chair, Senator Bonoff, the rates that we're speaking about today are based on current market conditions, and they would not be locked in until there was actual
right.
a sale.
Yeah. But that's
but yes, the 2.76 was the actual rates that were locked in the fall.
Okay, and then, Madam Chair, just just so that everybody knows, it seems to me it is quite smart, given this low interest rate, to lock in for a long period of time, and yet if the revenue is there, we could certainly pay it off much sooner, and that would be a smart way to use our money. And there wouldn't be a penalty for paying it off sooner, correct?
Senator Ms. Hansen?
Chair Senator Bonoff, we've allowed flexibility in the legislation to give us kind of the financing vehicle so that we can do that.
Thank you.
Just a point of clarification that the two state buildings that were sold had appropriation bonds actually were financed through the Port Authorities, and the TCF Stadium was financed through the University of Minnesota. So it wasn't the state doing the financing, actually, but the other two authorities had that responsibility. But they were appropriation bonds.
And based on the state's credit.
Madam Chair.
Senator Hand.
There was a question. I don't know that it got answered. I didn't hear it. I may have missed it. I was conversing with others. But the saving to the state in this deal using a general obligation rather than appropriation bond, what does that amount to over the 40-year span of this deal? I'm assuming that there's a lower, as was testified, there is a lower rate for a GO issue than an appropriation bond. So what is that? I mean, how much money would we save if we used a general obligation bond?
Again, the appropriation pledge carries a one notch lower rating than the state's general obligation rating. So that in the market, the difference between a AA1 and a AA2 by Moody's, you know, over the course of a 30-year bond issue is a 10 to 20 basis point spread in terms of
so borrowing cost. So 10 to 20% lower cost, is that what you're...
A tenth of a percent.
Are there... Senator Nino?
Well, Madam Chair, relative to this section and these questions, I do have an amendment. If it would be timely to offer that now, I will do that. If not, I will hold back.
I imagine.
Madam Chair,
Senator Rosen?
If I can ask Senator E now, is the amendment to this discussion, because I do have an amendment that perhaps might make this spreadsheet look a little
I will,
better.
If the author would like to wait until after your amendments, that's fine. We had a discussion, and I wanted to see if it would be good now, but I will wait.
Thank you.
Senator Rosen. I think are we done with the discussion? Or was your amendment related to the bonds?
To the appropriation bonds, to the revenue for the appropriation bonds.
Oh, to the revenue. We were just going to review the revenue issue. We were going to have Mr. Barrett and Commissioner France come up and do that. So maybe we should go to that first, so we understand where the revenue is all expected to come from, and then we could deal with it.
Madam Chair.
Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have Mr. Barrett from the Gambling Control Board and Commissioner France from Department of Revenue that have worked very, very hard on this revenue stream. And you must understand, Madam Chair and members, that, again, I must reiterate, we were given parameters to deal with as far as our revenue, what we could generate for revenue. And it was agreed upon by the entire working group that this would be the source of revenue. It had the less issues. It had agreement from the tribes. There's already lawful charitable gaming on statute. We're just modernizing this revenue stream. And people have looked at these numbers from across the nation. Goldman Sachs has looked at these numbers. RBC has looked at these numbers. They feel very confident with these numbers. I do know there's been some rhetoric about some backup funding just in case these numbers don't come in. But when you hear the assumptions and how these numbers came about from Mr. Barrett or Commissioner and how their estimations and how they came to these figures, you'll realize that these are very conservative figures and that the experts in the field across the nation feel that actually revenue will be coming in at a much more accelerated pace, and we will be able to pay off our debt service at a quicker pace. So with that, I'd like to turn it over to either one of the gentlemen.
Commissioner.
Madam Chair, with Mr. Barrett's permission, I'll go first. And what I'd like to do, members, is briefly just take 1 minute to sort of set the stage, because this is really a two-step process that we went through. The Gambling Control Board, through Mr. Barrett, did the analysis of what the addition of electronic games would mean for the charitable gambling, and then the revenue department took that and made its revenue estimate that you have before you. But I think it's important to remember as we walk into this sort of the current law. Right now, under current law, the lawful charitable gambling industry had about $1 billion of receipts last year. Of that, $44 million was available for the charity's profits, and about $37 million was available for state revenue. And that's the money that went into the state general fund. So starting at that level, then we proceed to the revenue assumptions and the gambling assumptions that Mr. Barrett went through. But I think one of the things that the revenue department did in looking at this was we took a lot of information from the charitable gambling industry itself. This is a proposal that came from the charitable gambling industry. They've been proposing this for several years. We've had charitable gambling in the state of Minnesota since 1945. We've had pull tabs for over 30 years. So we have a very long-term existing industry, about 1,200 organizations that Mr. Barrett will talk about. So when the revenue department worked with the Gambling Control Board, we took a look at the existing law that we currently have and what this addition to electronic gaming would do. So the criteria that we were really looking for was what could we do to respond to the charitable industry's request to add electronic games, to simplify the tax code for them, to add some tax reduction for them, to increase profits to the charities, which is clearly part of what's going on here, and to change the tax from a gross receipts tax to a net receipts tax, which benefits them as well. So we feel like we've really put together a proposal in Senator Rosen's bill that provides all of those benefits to the charities and, not unimportantly, provides a revenue source that is not a new tax. It's a tax on the addition of electronic games, and it's actually a tax reduction. The tax rates will go down. This is an option. Every charity that's out there that's engaged in lawful gambling can decide whether to go with electronic gaming or not. And if they do not choose to go to electronic gaming, they can continue with the paper pull tabs and paper bingo, and they will receive a tax reduction like everybody else. So that was the sort of the genesis of which we started working with the Gambling Control Board, and then I'll turn it over to Mr. Barrett to go walk through that. Then we can be available for questions unless you want to ask them now.
Senator Hand.
Madam Chair, before we get to, I just want to ask the Commissioner, if you could, who is going to pay the tax? Who is being taxed here?
Commissioner Frantz.
Madam Chair, Senator. So as a current system is engaged in right now, so when a patron goes out and buys a paper pull tab and they pay a dollar for the paper pull tab, you know, as you know, the average, I think, is 82% of the payouts are returned in prizes. But the payment that the patron makes to the charities collect all that money.
And Madam Chair?
Senator Hand.
And I'm not trying to, I just want to know who the tax falls on. Is this falling on the 1%, the top 1% of income earners in the state, or is it the lower 1%, or who pays the tax here?
Senator Frantz, or Commissioner Frantz.
Thank you for the promotions, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, Senator, well, obviously, it's really a distribution across the state, and that's a hard thing to determine. We haven't really run the schedules to know exactly who pays that. But, you know, you have to take a look at all those folks that support pull tabs and charitable gambling right now. It's really dispersed throughout the state, and I don't really have a good figure for you on that.
Madam Chair and Commissioner, I've looked at and seen the tax incidence studies, and there's a lot of work that's done to determine where taxes fall, and we look at that in relation to demographics and income, and I'm not sure if I am entirely convinced that nobody knows where this tax falls. And maybe you don't have it with you right here today, but I think it would be pertinent and useful to know which demographics, what are the kinds of folks that are paying the taxes, and even though it's a lower rate, there's clearly an anticipation of a much larger amount of money being collected, and I think the public should understand who is paying the taxes. And I would appreciate it, Commissioner, if you don't know today, that you would bring that information to the legislature before we have to vote on this.
Senator Ingebertson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Maybe Commissioner, you could shed a light on this. If this expanded gaming, expanded electronic gaming should go forward, will that percentage, in your mind, will that percentage change, whether somebody thinks it's the poor that's buying pull tabs or whether it's the wealthy or the middle income folks? Do you think that would change? Maybe that's what I need to – maybe that's coming in future testimony. But is this going to add to any 1%, any certain percentage of our income earners in Minnesota? Is it going to stay the same is what I'm wondering.
Commissioner Franz.
Madam Chair, Senator, I think both your questions, you know, obviously one of the things that we look at in the tax incidence study that you mentioned, Senator, is sales taxes tend to be regressive. And this is, if you will, we've always looked at this as a tax on the product, not a tax on charities. It's a tax on the gaming product, the pull tabs or bingo. So in that sense, it would tend to follow any sales tax and tend to be somewhat regressive in terms of the application. And we'll have to look at one of the things that I think Mr. Barrett will talk about is in the expansion, sort of what the Gambling Control Board, how they view that's going to change the gaming around the states around the charities.
Madam Chair. Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And again, I appreciate your questioning, Senator Hand, but this has been a proposal that has been in the works by the charities for a very long time that they've brought to. They feel very strongly that these dollars need to go to the charities. So whether you are supporting your Fairmont Hockey League or some other charity in your area, and that's what the demographic is, and you're going to go in and you're just going to do some pull tabs, have a fun night, and you're supporting your charity in that area, or you want to go in and support and do some electronic bingo because you know you're supporting a stadium, as Senator Ingebrigtsen perhaps said that this could change to. I think this is a reliable funding source that obviously is not new. It's already exists in law, and we're just modernizing and making it up to date to what it is. So there is probably going to be some increased interest, obviously, because people are excited about this, and this is something that the charities have wanted for a very long time.
And Madam Chair and Senator Rosen, I appreciate that, but there has been a whole lot of discussion certainly in the last year about who pays taxes in this state and whether there is a just and equitable distribution of those taxes. And I think that it would be at least helpful to know who is paying the taxes here. And as the Commissioner indicated, and I think he's correct, that sales taxes tend to be regressive. I don't know the exact demographic. Maybe Mr. Barrett knows of what is the pull tab clientele. But I think it should be clear that if we're going to tax a certain portion of the society to pay for the stadium, that we should know that before we decide. And that's my point.
Senator Stumpf.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think this is an important issue because I think if it's going to be successful and generate the revenues that are needed, it has to work. And it's my understanding that even though there's a lot of assurances that this has been worked out and that there's been, you know, good exchange with the charities and everything, that they're not too excited about the way this is set up in this bill, that it is going to work. And I think one issue is that there's a difference between what the version that's in the House and how they fare under that version and the version that you have before you here. And I know, and I think this is probably going to go to taxes, I believe, after the discussion here. But I would be interested to know exactly how the charities feel about whether this is going to work for them or not.
You know, Senator Stumpf, I know they're here, but I really want to go through the proposal, and then we'll bring them up so that they can address it. So I think we'll go through how you arrive at your revenue figures, and that would be with the current, with a reduced tax for the charities compared to what it is right now, but not as much of a reduced tax as is in the House bill. But we have to deal with this one right now that's before us. So, Mr. Barrett or Commissioner France, does one of you want to go through the sheet that Mr. Barrett? It's this sheet that says at the top, poll tabs, fiscal projections.
Madam Chair, members, my name is Tom Barrett, Director of the Gambling Control Board. Pleasure to be here, and I compliment Commissioner Franz on a very good overview of the industry and what it's all about. I will add a couple of quick comments. A lot of people don't realize how big charitable gaming is in Minnesota. It's number one in the country. Number one in the country. When our counterparts crossed the highway, the Minnesota State Lottery, a couple of weeks ago had the big Mega Million jackpot. I mean, it was in all the news. They had a record year in terms of gross receipts for activity. Charitable gambling is twice as large as what the gross receipts coming in for charitable gambling. So it is big. All those individual pull tab booths add up. 28% of the licensed organizations are veteran. So the American Legion, the VFW. So with that kind of overview, it does surprise a lot of people how big charitable gaming is. But with that in mind, and with the proposal that was begun about 3 years ago, after a study that was commissioned by the legislature to ask the Gambling Control Board to look at the industry and see what's going on in light of the decreasing activity related to the smoking ban, the economy, a number of factors, as well as find out what could benefit. So we came back in 2009 with a report that laid out some of the issues, both regulatory in nature, but also some of those factors. Two of the factors that were included in that report was the request from charities to look at tax reform. The other element was automation. If there's any way they could take what's been in paper for 30 plus years and find a way to automate in light of technology these days. So those two things have been out there. So we've worked the last few years. Now, with certainly increased awareness in terms of this opportunity afforded for revenue that would go to the state, we sat down with representatives from the charities. We sat down with representatives of the bar industry. We're the primary location for the sales. And we came up with a model based on what we know. There was some speculation. Should we factor in an increase in sites? A few years ago, there was 3,400, 3,200 sites. Now there's 2,800. And so with consultation with revenue and their analysts, it was good advice. Let's go with what we know. And what we know is currently today, there's 2,800 locations that are conducting some form of charitable gambling. The primary location are the bars, the VFWs. There's a handful, about 12, 15 bingo halls around the state. But we use those estimates to begin the model. As I mentioned, we had 2,800 locations. For the purposes of estimating what the impact of these electronic games, we started with a base of 2,500. In other words, not all sites are going to jump into the electronic gaming market. We understood that. The next factor we put in play was the number of seats. The bill puts a limitation on the number of devices that could be at any one site based on the seating capacity. And as we stepped down, those numbers all played into the model for what's in front of you. I mean, to the extent that gets into the time slot, the hours of the day, where obviously there's not many people conducting this form of gaming in the morning, but it picks up in the afternoon happy hour. But that's where we factored in the average usage. We consulted with some product vendors that have these devices in development. Some are in place. That's one element we have here is there is no model in any other state that is proposing to do what is being proposed in Minnesota, both in terms of the electronic link bingo and the electronic pull tab. There's variations out there, but some of the key elements in the device alone, limiting the cash in. There is no allowance for cash in. These are portable devices. Other states, Idaho, for example, has a electronic device, but it's cash in the machine. But those are some of the concerns in talking with industry reps and the style of play that got factored in. But continuing on, that was the model that was first established for the pull tab. We dropped down and look at the electronic bingo. Right now, we know bingo isn't played in all the locations, so we purposely dropped that rate down to 1,500 locations, again, out of a pool of roughly 2,800. But if you've been out to a local establishment in your communities, you might have seen advertisements for bar bingo. Bar bingo isn't allowed under the paper format right now. You can have electronic monitoring devices, but that's becoming more popular, believe it or not. People are coming back to play bingo. But for purposes of our model, we went with a 1,500 location. We did the same distribution based on the seating capacity and the number of devices, the time of play, the approximate wager per player per minute. Those are the factors that all went in. Then we sat back and said, here's the model, the way we look at it. We factored in, geez, if these devices come in, would we expect to see a decrease in the paper play? Yes. And so there is a factor, again, talking with some of the licensees, the distributors, the charities. And so that was a factor that was added as well. And then we went back to some of the product reps and some of our counterparts across the way in other states to say, how does this model look in terms of conservative? I have two letters from product reps that I'm certainly willing to share, but their belief is based on what we put down, it's a conservative estimate.
Madam Chair.
Senator Hand.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Mr. Barrett, I assume this is the model that you're talking about that we've been provided, and I'm looking at this too. And I confess I don't know anything about pull tabs, and I've never done it. I mean, I've seen them, but I've never done it, so I don't know anything about it. My understanding, though, is that in the past X number of years, the revenue from pull tabs has declined. And I've heard people who've been advocating for electronic pull tabs for other reasons over the past 2 or 3 years here at the legislature talk about that as a problem, that the decline in people using pull tabs and presumably going to casinos or doing something else to gamble. And so one thing that I'm curious to know, and I'm not sure that a product rep who's selling machines is a reliable source, to talk about how many more people are going to be using these machines. Are we talking about having more than there are currently playing this form of gambling, or are we talking about the same number playing it more often? Your model says that these machines are going to be in operation for 17 hours a day, and they're going to sell a ticket every minute. That's a lot, over 2,500 locations. And that's going to go on presumably 365 days a year. You're talking about $1.2 billion of additional revenue from where we currently are, and that's going to last for 40 years. And I'm not sure that I'm confident that those are reliable numbers. I think certainly the math works in the model, but I'm not sure that the assumptions driving the math are reliable, given the history of the pull tab experience over the past 15, 20 years in Minnesota that hasn't been reliable and hasn't been an ever-increasing stream of revenue. And the second thing I'd like to ask related to that, in the bill on page 61, subdivision 9, it talks about the control board after July of 2013 may increase the limits on the number of devices, which I read to mean that after that date there can be as many devices placed in the state as you may wish, without any limit at all. And is that contemplating then that there will be a far greater number than what you've got in your model? And if so, why is that needed if this particular model works under the given assumptions? And then the last thing, just going back to the question I'd asked the commissioner earlier, what are the demographics of the people who play these games? And what are people wagering? And how much? And and I think that's important to know how reliable your model is. What are the people? How many are there? What kind of income do they bring to be disposable to play this kind of game? Do you have information on that?
Mr. Barrett.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Senator Hahn. The Gambling Control Board does not track the demographics in terms of who's playing. Obviously, we know the sites where the games are being played, but we never attempted to look at doing age. I know the Minnesota State Lottery does almost an annual report as far as the gaming activity and some of the who's playing the lottery, who's playing charitable gaming, who's at the casinos. And I'm not an expert in that sense, but I know there's a source that tries to put that into play, and I would direct or talk to the lottery to get a copy of that. But the Gambling Control Board does not track any of the demographics related to the players. To that point, however, the expectation with the electronic format is expected. This is, again, talking with the bar industry reps, the charities, that it's the format itself that they hope to bring customers back, new customers in addition to the folks that are playing the current paper games. As it relates to the not a reliable source and the vendor, I hear you in that respect, and yet what's going on in some of the other states, and we do get some information from the other states. But I looked our own state first. As you recall, there was a bill earlier pledged that talked about the Minnesota State Lottery possibly as an option with electronic scratch ticket devices. So they did a fiscal note as well. Now, if you look at some of the detail, and I'll caution, there's a little apples with oranges in terms of that those devices versus what's being proposed here. When we got right down to it, they looked at a average net receipt per device per day, and that's listed at $140 per day. And what's being proposed in electronic gaming is $33.75, $34 a day. So in terms of comparable, there's some difference, but this is within our own confines for a similar number of devices.
Senator Rosen. Madam Chair, and also to answer Senator Hand's question about the gambling board being able to increase the number of devices, that was an amendment by Senator DeCrieff that was put onto the bill yesterday. And actually, he had a specific number of devices that could go into less than 200 seats, more than 200 seats. And so it was amended to just say that the Gambling Control Board has the option to increase those. I'm not sure if Mr. Barrett, I had to step out, but I'm not sure if you went through the scenario of how we came up with these numbers in the bill for each establishment and the size of the establishment. It's an agreed upon numbers with the tribes, and so that's why we just had amended this yesterday to say the Gambling Control Board has the option to open up those negotiations to increase if they would like.
Senator Newman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Barrett, in terms of electronic pull tabs and bingo versus the paper and the money that is to go towards the stadium versus money that is that will go to the charities, like Senator Rosen said, the charity in Fairmont, for instance, the baseball teams, et cetera. Does all of the money from electronic pull tabs go towards the stadiums, to the stadium, or do charities share in that revenue source? Are charities going to see a reduction in the amount of money that they receive because we are anticipating a reduction in paper pull tabs? Could you just explain to me the stadium versus our local charities?
Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I will turn this over to the Commissioner for your question, Senator Newman, a very good question because he does have the numbers. But I'd like to just say that there has been tremendous amount of negotiations going forward with this. And the House has a provision that is, for us, it's a little problematic as far as the states being able to make their commitment. We think we have a proposal in this bill that was amended yesterday to put in the percentages, and we think this is very doable and very good for the charities going forward, for the bar owners going forward, and for the state. And we turned it around. The earlier calculations were on the gross receipts. These calculations are on the net receipts, and that was a very big concession and movement forward. Are we still open for negotiations? Absolutely. But we absolutely have to make sure that we make our state share and that there is a commitment and that the charities they are going to make a tremendous amount of money going forward on this. But I will turn it over to Commissioner Hanson.
Commissioner Hanson.
Madam Chair, Senator, let me give you the numbers. So as I mentioned earlier, in 2011, under the current law, the charities make about $44 million in profits for their charitable activities. And the state there's about $37 million generated for state revenue that goes to the general fund. Under the proposal in Senator Rosen's bill, the charities would receive $66 million more under this provision in the first full fiscal year. So that would add to the $44 million they would have available for profits about $110 million with the addition of the $66 million. Now, also, there's three things I want to mention here. So number two is the small business owners, the bars, would probably receive an estimated $28 million more in rent compensation because of the increased activity. So their receipts would go from $17.8 million to $45.8 million. And lastly, number three, the state would receive $59 million more in the general revenue fund on top of the $37 million that it now gets, or a total of $96 million. So the goal here was to provide, as Senator Rosen said, a robust opportunity for the charities to have tax simplification, tax rate reductions, to have the tax made on net receipts, not gross receipts, which allow. And so if you look at the revenue estimate, you may look at the rates may look like they're going up fairly high. Well, that's because they're based on the net receipts now. So every $100 that goes out, $85 gets paid in prizes. This tax is based on that 15%. So it has to be about six times what the earlier rate was on the gross receipts tax. So by accomplishing all of these items, we think we've provided the charities with a wonderful opportunity to make money for their charities going forward.
And Madam Chair.
Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd just like to address something that I've heard over and over again about that. Number one, is this going to generate enough revenue? And I understand that. Is this fiscal note or are these numbers real going forward? And they question the Department of Revenue's analysis going forward. Well, my reply, and actually it's several other people's reply too, is how do we ever put a budget together if we can't rely on the Department of Revenue's fiscal notes? We should question everything going forward. We should question the fiscal note on Racino or on anything. And so I somewhat want to be a little defensive about the department's numbers. I think they are very good. They're very conservative. And so I feel strongly that we should trust in knowing what they're doing here.
Madam Chair,
to this point directly.
This point directly, Madam Chair. I can't resist. Senator Rosen, I hope next year, when questions are raised about the Department of Revenue and the Department of Management budget as to the numbers they present and their fiscal notes, you'll join me in supporting them, as was not the case last year. Yeah, directly to the point, Madam Chair.
Chair, to unbelievable. This point.
Senator Pan.
And Senator Rosen, I think the reason why this is an important point is that because we're not talking about general obligation bonds. If we're talking about general obligation bonds, then the stability of the revenue stream is perhaps less of an issue, because what we're saying is that we're going to use taxation or we're going to do whatever we need to do to pay the obligation. But if we're saying that this is going to be premised over 40 years on this revenue stream, I think that's where there, to me, is a higher level of scrutiny that needs to be brought to that and say, how reliable is it? And given the history of gambling revenues in this state, I don't think that they have been on a steady state, and there are lots of things that play into that. And I do think, Commissioner Franz, just again to reinforce the point, I believe that you should produce a letter to the legislature before, if presuming this does come up for a vote, to tell us where the tax falls, what is the incidence of this tax, so that the legislature can know who we are taxing, as we do in every time we impose a tax. Who is going to pay the tax before we vote?
Sure.
Madam Chair.
Senator Rosen.
Just for clarification, the appropriation bonds are for 30 years. Just want to make sure that we clarify that.
We have Senator Newman, Ingebertson, and Perry. Senator Newman.
I've already asked my question. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay, Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I'm not sure exactly. Maybe Mr. Barrett could answer this. There was mention about a reduction in gaming revenues in pull tabs over the last years. Is that correct?
Mr. Barrett.
Madam Chair, Senator Ingebrigtsen, correct. In the High Point, roughly 2005, it was a $1.4 billion industry. That's now just over $1 billion. So since that time, it's dropped $400 million annually. But I will point out this is an interesting tidbit. With all the discussion going on, maybe related to the electronic format, for the last month that we received the report from revenue, paper sales, the sale of paper games for charitable gaming has increased 15% for the month of December, and we haven't seen an increase like that in years.
Okay, follow-up question, Madam Chair, would be the do you have a handle on, you're not required to, I understand, but would anybody have a handle on with the state of Minnesota gaming reduction, and I think it's fair to say probably the economy drives that somewhat, less people are going to play. Do we know anything about the tribal gaming, whether that actually reduced or not over the last years, following suit with the Minnesota pull tabs?
Mr. Barrett.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Senator Ingebrigtsen, another very good question, because we looked at what was causing some of the change. Smoking ban was a significant impact on locations that offered charitable gaming, the bars. So at that time, when I attempted to talk to our counterparts at a local tribal casino, it was simply asking, we have the smoking ban here now, do you see it not getting into any of their finances, but do you see an increase in attendance at your bingo activity? And again, we share some information, but the response I got was a couple-page letter reminding that the Gambling Control Board does not have the regulatory oversight for the tribal. So to that point, that while we look to see where did they go or what's going on, there was some resistance.
Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Madam Chair, follow up on that. That's rather interesting because the short stint that I have been here, actually that was my amendment, was to, on the floor of the Senate, was during the smoking ban, was to allow the tribal gaming folks to participate with their Minnesota partners, bar partners, restaurant partners, everybody else in Minnesota, to join in with the smoking ban, and of course that was refused. So my guess is then the answer you got was yes, it probably did increase for them. That's just my opinion. I think that's a pretty reasonable assumption, especially those that are very close to the tribal gaming. My other question would be, when you talk about paper pull tabs and electronic pull tabs, they're different in nature. If a bar owner wants to stay with pull tabs, and they have that option in this bill, does the same percentage apply to them as it does for the electronic? Just so I have are they the same all the way across?
Mr. Barrett.
Madam Chair and Senator Ingebrigtsen, another good point. There is a difference in the reimbursement, the rent factor, simply because if you're familiar with the paper pull tab, you pay $20 and it takes the time to count out the 20. With the electronics devices, the expectation is there's less of an effort to conduct the transaction and count out the tickets. You register the receipt or the sale, printed receipt with the PIN number, and away they go. So again, with consultation representatives from the industry, it was negotiated a lower rate for the electronic format as opposed to the paper.
Senator Perry.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. I think some around here realize that I carried the charitable gambling bill and pulled that back to the author some time ago. It was sitting in taxes, wasn't moving anywhere. But when we built that bill with Mr. Wilson, we were up and down on the revenues, wondering how it was going to come in. We went back and forth and back and forth. And I do have a concern with this revenue stream. Because, as we've heard here, it's not based on taxes that you do, Commissioner, very well. Pretty much, I think you've been spot on the tax part of it. You have to realize this is based on spendable income. Not one person has mentioned that. This revenue stream, charitable gambling, is spendable income. And think about what's happened over the last few years. As a small business owner, I can tell you what happens. When the gas price goes up, I lose pizza sales. Why? Spendable income. And that's where I really have a tough part in this form, charitable gambling, because I believe there's other streams out there that are more, appear to be more consistent, even through down times. And what scares me the most about this, thinking about spendable income, is that I certainly don't want to be the legislator that builds a stadium on the backs of our youth sports, of our VFWs, and our Legion. That's why we have to be so concerned that these numbers can be maintained. And when you bring in this spendable income factor to this, and we could talk about, and we have, King Wilson and I have talked, Mr. Barrett and I have talked about the who, how many guys are going to go out and throw $20 down and get the little tickets, and how many people are actually going to use these machines. That's a way of life that we have. But I think we best not forget spendable income as we're taking a look at this, because that, my friends, is going to have a big determining factor in how these dollars come in on the charitable side. Hopefully the economy will go up, people will have more, and those that want to participate can. But I'm just, that's what concerns me about this. And I don't know if we can, as you say, Senator Rosen, I don't know if we can put everything in stone. Sometimes you got to take a risk of some sort. But I think we need to remember those two words, you know, spendable income.
Thank you, Senator Perry. That's a good point. And I agree that spendable income has affected many, many entertainment venues in the last several years because people just have had less of it. And it certainly plays a role. But as far as the charities in this particular bill, what I heard Mr. Barrett say is that, well, the state would be expecting $59 million more per year in revenue, the charities would be expecting $66 million more. And so that would be a lot of additional money going back that would just stay in the local communities there, and including that the owners of the establishments that host these games would be getting an additional projected $28 million. And that, again, is money that would stay in local communities. And so combined, that's like $94 million and that of additional revenue raised for local businesses and causes in the community. And so, you know, I'm hoping these figures work out too, Senator Perry. It could go up and down, though, with the economy.
And Madam Chair, to the point, you're actually right. And that's where I'm coming from, you know, is that we're basing some of the numbers on a perceived notion that this new machine will help increase. And I have always been told when I've been talking with folks about gambling in a state is that you only have so many gamblers. There's only so many gamblers. And I don't want to belabor this. It's just really something that has sunk in when I start thinking about this spendable income and the potential that goes down and people quit playing it, Madam Chair, and will the next legislature come back and say, we're going to change? And I know Senator Rosen has worked so hard on the tax relief for these local units, and she's done her homework and done it well, but if that were to happen and a legislature in the future comes back and say, well, we're going to change this, and that's where I come with the feeling is I don't want to be put in a position where somebody would say, Senator Perry, you and your colleagues just built a stadium on the backs of our charitable gambling units. And I just, we just need to be so careful here on that.
Commissioner France.
Chair and Senator, I really appreciate your comments, and you too, Chair. I think we all are very concerned, and I know we take this very seriously as well in terms of any revenue estimate and whether we're going to rely on it. I do want to just give one bit of comfort, and that is that this was run through the most recent February forecast. So it is the most recent economic data that we have, but it is an estimate. We think they're reasonable, and we think they're conservative, but it is an estimate to your point, Senator.
Thank you.
Is there someone from the charities, now that we've covered this area, that would like to come up and testify? Mr. Wilson? I believe I'd like you to share with us whether or not you think that the figures are something that is achievable.
Mr. Chair, committee members, my name is King Wilson. I'm the executive director of Allied Charities of Minnesota. Appreciate being here this morning. You know, as Senator Perry said, he had a bill last year that would authorize electronic link bingo and electronic poll tabs. It's an initiative that we brought to him. It's something, as Senator Rosen said, that would modernize and update games that we're currently doing, so we do not view it as an expansion. We brought the bill forward because our intent was we wanted to get some significant tax reform and relief. That, I think, is the charity's first and foremost priority. As the bill's gone forward, our bill was not designed to build a stadium. It was designed to build communities, to help the veterans, help the kids, and help things. And as we've evolved, it ended up that this was being considered as a funding source for the stadium. And we are very much willing to do our fair share. I believe that I want to go on the record that I support the Minnesota Vikings. I hope they stay here, support finding a stadium package, and hope this bill will move forward. I think it's important to that. However, I do also want to say that I think the numbers that Mr. Barrett and the Department of Revenue, as they've put those forward, I think it's based on a number of assumptions. And we think that the reform and relief is critical, and depending upon what that package is, will lead to, are these machines successful? And I think, as I said yesterday in front of the committee, there was a kind of a fill-in-the-blank, and that got put together, and we have a formula on the table today. And I will acknowledge from the reform area, I think that there is a lot of good things have changed. We no longer will have an upfront tax. Going from gross to net is going to be huge. That's going to help our existing games as well as the new games going forward. As Senator Stump said, I'm not, and I told this at the committee yesterday, I think it was a very good step forward yesterday. I understand that there are numbers that need to be put together, and I also understand that there's a process. There's two bodies. There's a different package in the House side, and that provides more charitable gambling tax relief and reform than this does. But I think we're moving in the right direction. I think we're going to get there. I think we want to work together in whatever the few days left of this legislative session to put a package together that'll work for everybody. That the numbers that are on the table today, we're not quite there, but as I say, we're heading in the right direction. And between the discussions that'll be going on over the next few days, we've been working, and we sometimes have to agree to disagree a little bit. But we're all heading in the right direction. And I think we're going to get there. The base model that Mr. Barrett that started all this, I agree, because I've talked to many of the same manufacturers that he has, and I think most of those think that per dollar per day is a conservative number. And I think for a project like this and for what we're attempting to do, I think it's incredibly important that we would much rather be realistically conservative and have it prove out on the plus side than to have come in a high number. So I think we're heading in the right direction. I will say, we have currently we pay 46% of our net profits go towards taxes. And that reason we sought relief is because we just think that's too high. The package that's in front of you today, the $59 million that's coming for the state share. If I'm doing my mathematics right, that's still about 47%. So we're not going to see much of a change there. And we just have fundamentally said all along the fact that charities are paying 47% of their net profits seems to be extraordinarily high from our perspective. That's considerably higher than what other for-profit businesses were going to do. And so that was why we initiated our other proposal so that we could bring the electronics on. They were the electronics were kind of the means to get to the end to get relief and reform. I think the bill in front of us has some significant and positive relief or reform, and I think as we go forward that we'll continue the discussions on the relief. And I guess the good thing is we are not a unicameral legislature. There are different thoughts, and as it goes forward, hopefully those thoughts will meld, and I think we're going to get somewhere that it ends up allowing us to all come away doing what we wanted to do.
Thank you. Senator Stump.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Think of that.
We all know how important the charities are and what they do in our communities. What figure do you think would be helpful in terms of getting them to a point that you think that this would really work?
Mr. Chair, Senator Stumpf, the proposal that's on the Senate side is something that it's about a $36 million package. They have, when we get into other things above and beyond charitable gambling, I'll be honest, I don't understand all those facts and numbers. And as I've sat and listened to appropriation bonds and general bonds, I am really, really confused. That's a number that I think, gives us really significant reform and relief. This bill doesn't go quite that far. I think right now it's about $13 million. And, there's other things out there. Getting the electronics is, I think, something that is important. I think it just brings us into today's technology. Again, modernizing and updating our current games, I think it's important. I think we're going to have people out there. There are some people that, and I want to be perfectly clear, the whole idea is, we're not eliminating or replacing paper pull tabs. I think that they are going to continue to be strong. With the reform of the tax on net, I think we're going to have organizations are going to be able to do some different things than they currently can do with their prize percentages, and that's going to be really helpful even on the paper end as well as the electronic end. So, we prefer at this point, obviously, the House package, but we're committed to keeping this moving forward and working, and I don't know where we'll end up. I hope no later than Monday, but I think we're headed in the right direction, and, whatever the dollar figure, what's important is adding to the bottom line, and both bills are going to add to our bottom line so that we're going to have some significant additional revenue to support the fire trucks, the defibrillators, the veterans team, the ice hockey. So the fact that both bills now have relief and reform, we're just at different – we have some differences, and I think over the next few days, hopefully we'll be able to end up finding something that works. And I'm not sure where that number is, but – we need to do both, and I think we're heading that way.
Madam Chair,
Senator Stump.
It would be helpful if you let us know what that number should be.
They'll work on that. In the meantime, Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess the question I would ask is, do you think that the paper pull tabs will go up with the e-tabs and bingo? Is that kind of your assumption, and number one, do you think the assumptions are good in this bill?
Mr. Wilson.
Mr. Chair and Senator Angers, we really do like that $36 million mark. And I understand from Senator Rosen's perspective but that is a number I like. Senator Angers, I know within the assumptions that the board has is they're thinking that there will be about a 20% reduction in the paper poll tabs. That's something that I have not believed. And particularly now that we have shifted to a tax on net, I think there will be, I think we will see little reduction in paper poll tabs. Whether it'll be an increase, I don't know. But just being able to play higher percentage of games, which a net tax will allow us to do, I think that's going to tremendously help the paper, as well as it's going to lead to the success on the electronics as well.
Thank you. And Madam Chair, just one quick follow-up.
Senator Ingebrigtsen.
What you're making now with charities, what percentage are you going to go up under this bill?
Mr. Wilson.
Net receipts. What will the charities gain on this bill overall?
Mr. Chair and Senator Ingebrigtsen, last year we had $44 million for the bottom line, the charitable contributions, and I think it's about $66 million additional for the bottom line if we get there to the numbers. We have another body that has even a higher number, and you know what? The more we can have for these local organizations to give to whatever they give to. And, you know, a Legion gives differently than does a VFW, which is different than the Lions and the Elks and the Moose. And when we're all said and done, I think we're going to see a significant increase in the dollars that these organizations have to give to the worthy programs that they support in virtually every community in this state.
Senator Hand, I have another person who wants to testify, too, on the charitable gambling, and I want to tell you my intention. We have members who need to leave and be in a funeral at 1 o'clock, and so by 12:45, I am hoping that we can wrap up our discussion, and we need to have some amendments heard yet, so I'm going to ask testifiers to be as brief and succinct as possible. So with that, Senator Hand.
I just want to clarify the point, Madam Chair, that Mr. Wilson just made, and maybe Mr. Barrett. The structure that you're proposing then would result in about a doubling of the revenue to the state. You mentioned about $1 billion from the current poll tab, and now it's going to be an additional 1.2 or 3 or 5. So we're going to double the revenue to the state. And Mr. Wilson, I think you said that the charities are going to see their increase go from about 40 to 60 million. So about 100% increase to revenue to the state, is that correct? And about a 50% increase to the revenue to the charities, is that correct?
Mr. Barrett.
Madam Chair and Senator Hahn, no. The charities currently spend roughly 44, 45 million per year. I know a lot of good things. The new format is estimated to bring in an additional 66 million. So upwards of $110 million.
Ms. Glusing from the gambling manager for Klein Theater, if you would come forward, and if you have something that hasn't been addressed yet, please.
For the record, Lori Glusing, gambling manager for Klein Theater. CLIM is not one of the veteran groups, but we travel around the state doing educational theater at the schools. And the gambling portion of CLIM is to help reduce the costs for the presentations to the schools. Since I have been at CLIM, we have been paying between 3 to 5 times as much to the state as we've been able to give to charity. To me, that's a little out of proportion. We've heard the taxes being called regressive and such. Personally, I would call them oppressive. But I'm not speaking for any other charities, for anybody else except myself and Klein. But I do think there are a lot of charities out there who feel like I do. Many have told me that if tax relief is not greater than what is in this current bill, they will be gone by the end of the year. They cannot afford to keep going. The electronics are going to cost us a lot of time and money to put into effect. You know, as Mr. Wilson said when he did the numbers, our percentage of tax dollars is actually increasing, not decreasing, from 46% to 47%. Climb's taxes have been around the 34%, and now I'm looking in the bill, and it's going to be 36.4%. And somehow this doesn't compute for me for being tax relief. I really prefer the language in the House bill. I'm hoping you'll consider it and consider amending this section of the bill. The rest of it, I really would like to move forward, but I think this is being done on the backs of the charities, as you stated, and I think it is at the expense of the veterans and the kids, and that upsets me.
We will be sending this bill to the tax committee, so they will be looking at that particular issue more so than this committee.
Okay.
But
thank you for
you.
Your time.
I'm wondering, Senator Rosen, if we should move forward with some amendments. I don't know if we have anyone else who... I know we haven't taken anyone from the Vikings or
the mayor.
The mayor. If the mayor would like to come forward and address in particular the Minneapolis portion of the funding, we don't need to go through the site issues or anything like that. That was covered in local government and... So we're looking at the financing end of it.
Very good, Madam Chair and Senators. I'll make this very brief, and because of the committee, I'll obviously focus solely on the finance issues. The state of Minnesota and the city of Minneapolis have had a partnership in funding sports facilities for some time. That's how the Metrodome was built. The state imposed taxes, hospitality taxes in Minneapolis. That's how the Twin Stadium is being built. In that case, it's Minneapolis and the rest of Hennepin County. There's also been a strategy in the hospitality industry. And the reason I raise this is that this is how the funding stream works in Minneapolis. Since 1987, there have been sales taxes imposed by the state and the city of Minneapolis. 3% for liquor, 3% for restaurant, 3% for lodging was added in 2002, 2% for lodging in 91. 2.5% for lodging in 87. Those taxes are all now dedicated to paying off the bonds on the convention center. But when we were asked to come up with our, those bonds will extend till 2020. When we were asked to partner on this, we looked at those funds and recognized that when the bonds are paid off in 2020, there will still be a need to bring conventions to the state. There will still be a need to keep the building going. But when the bonds are paid off, there may be some ability to use part of that excess. And so that's what the core of this issue of our strategy is. Basically, the idea is that the state will continue to impose those hospitality taxes. They won't raise in the city of Minneapolis, but they would be extended from 2020 to 2045. The first part of those dollars will be used for the stadium as part of this deal. The others would be allow the city of Minneapolis for the first time to be able to have the ability to use those for local economic development. And that's the core of the issue. And I could go into more detail, but maybe I should simply stop and answer questions.
Are there questions for the mayor? Senator Hand.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Mayor Rybak, a couple of questions with respect to Article 4 in the bill. One is Section 4 that talks about the charter limitations of the city not to apply. And could you just give us the explanation of why that should be done?
Sure. Madam Chair, Senator, as I've mentioned at the outset, the state of Minnesota imposes hospitality taxes in the city of Minneapolis for dedicated purposes. We have no control over those. As I've said before, if I had control over those as much as I care about the hospitality industry, I would have used those to lower property taxes and put cops on the street a long time ago. The state has total control over those dollars. This plan acknowledges that and has the state continue to direct where those dollars go. That does not involve the city being using those dollars.
And
Senator Hand.
Thank you, Mayor. And also the provision, I think it's Article 4, Section 7, that talks about local sales tax requirements not to apply. And I, looking at that, and it seems that what we're doing is saying that the requirement for some public referendum is being set aside in this provision. Is that correct?
I think this local sales tax is in the stadium.
Mayor Rybick or?
Madam Chair, there is no requirement for a referendum in this clause, if I'm misreading this.
And, well, Madam
Senator
Chair,
Hand.
Maybe then.
That's Madam Chair and Senator Franklin, I think this just waives this if I'm
Senator
responding
Frank?
Quickly on this, but
yes,
it's not something that is our requirement, right? Am I reading that right?
Senator Bonner.
Madam Chair, that's my question, too, because the language that's written says that charter limitations not to apply does sound like it's being waived, and yet what we're being told is that it's not being waived because there is no reason to have it. So I was concerned that we even have this section in the bill because if the charter limitations don't apply, based on interpretation of the law, why is it spelled out here?
Mayor Rybick.
Madam Chair, Senator, I misread that section as I was trying to get it quickly. This bill does not need to waive anything involving our charter because our understanding is that this does not impact our charter. So for that purpose, this clause is not necessary. This clause may be necessary for some of the things we would like to do with Target Center.
Senator Higgins, did you have a question?
Yes, Madam Chair, I think I did. Mayor, the extension to a 40-year lease, is it your understanding that that means that the city will pay the $7.5 million a year for another 10 years?
Madam Chair and Senator, that extension of 40-year lease is something that we do not support because we understand that to be basically like having your 30-year mortgage extended to 40 years with the privilege of paying more. That is not something that we support.
And Madam
Senator
Chair
Higgins.
And Senator Rosen, extending that 40-year, extending to 40 years, I would have expected that the per year amount would go down relative, in proportion, but it doesn't seem to do that anywhere here. So that was one of the things that I was really concerned about, is this extending another 10 years on there, and what's the fiscal impact to both city and state, but especially city?
Madam Chair,
Mayor Rybick.
Just for clarity, we would obviously be very supportive of any negotiation between the state and the Vikings that keeps the Vikings in the lease for 10 more years. We just simply don't want to pay additional amount for that.
Yeah.
Madam Chair.
To that issue, are we going to address this amendment that was just passed out?
Yes, Madam Chair, and also Ms. McQuay would also like to address that issue about with Senator Higgins.
We need someone to offer the amendment, or do you want us to offer the amendment?
Senator Ingebrigtsen had the amendment, Madam Chair.
Senator Newman will offer the amendment. And
Madam Chair, if we could have the A109, a walkthrough by Ms. McQuay, that would be nice. But basically, this is to get the bill back into the proper form to move forward. Basically, it deals with some adjustments, but there was an amendment that was put on yesterday for the St. Paul River Center, and that absolutely takes our financial sheets and our fiscal note here and really, really messes it up. So I'd like to have Ms. McQuay point that out on the spreadsheet and also talk about the changes here going forward. We are still leaving the $1.3 million per year for 20 years for St. Paul to be used for either a sports facility or for debt relief going forward with the negotiations to continue. But the amendment that went on yesterday was a bit of a surprise. It does not work. It makes the state's finances very shaky there for a few years, and it's just not doable. It comes out of the general fund. So my promise to go forward with negotiations with St. Paul and Minneapolis to work something that is doable, but I personally feel $1.3 million for 20 years was a very good start, very good place to start with. And so I'd appreciate your support on this amendment.
Well, thank you, Senator Rosen. I wasn't about to let this bill get out of here unbalanced. And so I did see a major problem with the Article 8, and I do believe that we would need to remove that provision before we could release it from this committee. And the other provisions in here, Senator Rosen, are basically related. I'm a little puzzled about the changes from 2046 to 2056. Are they only related to the lease for the stadium, for the Vikings, or does it have to do with the extension of payments from Minneapolis? I wish someone would explain that.
Absolutely, Madam Chair.
Madam Chair and members, I'll just walk quickly through the amendment and then answer questions as I go along. Lines 1 through 5 would just be grammatical fixes. Line 6 would insert the state, and that allows for language that says the state has agreed to pay back the NFL. And I think that may need to be adjusted going forward. Mm-hmm. Lines 7 through 11 takes into account when the available revenues for the reallocation, we need to also take into account for the first 5 years the state is paying back the operating and the capital costs, or paying the operating capital costs on behalf of Minneapolis. So we need to take into account the state is paying those before any amounts are calculated for any reallocation to debt service and early payoff of bonds. Lines 12 through 14, there was language inserted yesterday in Jobs Committee that any additional money after a reallocation for the Minneapolis Convention Center funds for debt service and for early payoff of bonds. In addition, there was a provision added to allow for payoff, if any additional funds remain, for payoff of any state general obligation bonds, and that's removed in lines 12 through 14 of the amendment. I would ask Senator Newman to incorporate the deletion of lines 15 and 16 into his amendment. That was not the intention to extend those. Rather, the extension of line of 2046 to 2056 is just meant to allow Minneapolis or allow the state to continue to retain the operating and the capital expenses, the $6 million and the $1.5 million, for the purposes of paying the operating and the capital expenses annually for the term of 40 years instead of 30 years. The deletions of lines 15 and 16 mean that Mr. Gustafson's spreadsheet remains, that the payback of what Minneapolis owes the state for the $150 million upfront in bonds and the first 5 years of the state paying operating and capital expenses would be paid off in 30 years, not 40 years.
So that's okay, as long as we're deleting 15 and 16?
Madam Chair.
Senator Newman.
Madam Chair, as to the request for, the change, your recommendation, how we do it, oral amendment, I just incorporate it, however,
we will.
Senator Rosen wants to do it, is fine with me.
We'll incorporate it in this A109 amendment. Before we vote on it, we'll just have it reviewed one more time.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Madam Chair and members, lines 20 through 33 makes changes on the requirements to the linked bingo and the e-pull tab devices. And it's in there twice because one is a change to the to how the linked bingo devices look, and one is a change to the way the e-pull tabs looks. And then the changes on lines 34 and 35 would be to conform the effective dates for the tax rate changes to the spreadsheet. So the tax rates go into effect as soon as the increase in volume happens. And then on line 36, the deletion of Article 8 would delete the River Center bond defeasance and loan forgiveness provisions. And in doing so, the spreadsheet would show a net general fund impact of zero.
Madam Chair.
Senator Cohen.
Madam Chair, could I ask for division of the amendment to set aside line 36, or would you prefer that we just deal with the whole amendment?
Do you want to vote
separately?
I'd
move that we deal separately with lines 1 through 35 and then 36 as a separate amendment.
Divide the amendment.
We would divide the amendment. Senator Newman, which part of the amendment would you vote on first?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would vote on line 36 first.
Okay. That would eliminate what was added yesterday in the Jobs Committee related to the St. Paul payments for the XL and River Center project. Senator Cohen.
Well, Madam Chair, then if we're going to speak to that part of the amendment first, then I guess I'd like to talk for a couple of minutes, and if I could ask Mayor Coleman to come to the witness table for a little bit of help on this. Madam Chair, I have not attempted, and I intend to speak for a couple of minutes. I know we love to cut off debate in this place, but I intend to speak for a couple of minutes. And let me make it very clear to members of this committee. I've not been a St. Paul legislator, and I've served here for more than a few years, who has acted in a way contrary, condescending, nor engaged in this historic, juvenile Minneapolis-St. Paul rivalry. And let me also make it clear that over the years, the mayors of Minneapolis I've dealt with have also not engaged in that type of attitude around this place. But if any mayor has not engaged in that, it's Mayor Ryback, who has bent over backwards to look at Minneapolis and St. Paul as a regional, if not single entity, two cities with their futures tied together. And I say that, Mayor Ryback, you've had predecessors such as Don Fraser, who has been one of my personal political heroes in the state, but I think nobody more than Mayor Ryback has made the attempt to work with St. Paul and with the regional area. So having said that, however, the inequities between Minneapolis and St. Paul have been significant. And I've not been a person who has tried to get in the way of Minneapolis. In fact, relative to proposals in the city of Minneapolis, there was a former member of this legislature, a member of the House, I think it would be fair to say a person who was not widely admired, said I was the best legislator Minneapolis could ever ask for. I told this particular legislator that I was tired of doing things for his district. I was going to do some things for my district, and it just so happened some of the things they wanted were in Minneapolis. So I've not been somebody who has tried to maintain this rivalry. I have people in my district who are not lifelong Minnesotans or St. Paulites as I am. People have come into the state who don't understand what this so-called rivalry is. But having said that, and I recognize St. Paul is the smaller town, I recognize St. Paul does not have the ability to support some of the efforts that Minneapolis has. But just to deal with apples and apples, over the years, Minneapolis, in terms of state dollars, and somebody can correct me if they want, in terms of state dollars, has had, and I'm not talking about the GO kinds of efforts in a bonding bill, you know, to the nonprofits, to the Guthrie or to the Ordway or to whatever. $15 million for the Target Center, $256 million for the TCF Stadium, $55 million for the Metrodome, $80 million for the Convention Center, and I believe with Senator Rosen's bill, $398 million. By contrast, in terms of apples-to-apples state dollars, St. Paul has had $17 million for the hockey arena, and in Senator Rosen's current bill, $26 million, or in the bill that Senator Rosen has had. So that's a percentage of roughly 95% to 5%. It seems to me, I believe, that would be inequitable. I also think that obviously this will be the last large, at least probably in our legislative lifetimes, the last large capital expenditure that we will see. Now, it's not my intent to get into a debate of, will the Vikings move, or do we need to do this now? And I'm not going to get into those arguments. What I do know is the failure of this legislation, since this could well be the last train out of the station, to use the cliche, will be the last opportunity to correct some of the inequities visited upon St. Paul. And there are members at this table who know that I have attempted over the last several years, to be fair, stopped by what is now the majority caucus with the then governor, to address some of that inequity when we had legislation off the Senate floor. And I strongly, strongly, strongly oppose the effort to remove Section 8, Article 8, from this bill. Senator Rosen, you have suggested that yesterday's action in the Jobs Committee was a big surprise. I don't think it was exactly a big surprise that St. Paul had some significant concerns as to the inequities and our difficulty in dealing with these kinds of issues. It was raised in the committee yesterday that obviously Minneapolis intends to direct local dollars for this purpose. St. Paul has certainly directed local dollars for the purpose of some of its facilities. And in fact, for I think about a three-year period or so, with the original Metrodome legislation, there was a metro-wide hospitality tax, which I think after 3 years was reduced, converted to simply a Minneapolis-only hospitality tax. So I'm not even counting that in the dollars I just detailed, because I'm not sure how much that was. I'm not suggesting that St. Paul should dollar for dollar equal where Minneapolis is, but I'm certainly suggesting that St. Paul should have some opportunity, and this is the only opportunity, to deal with some of these issues that have put us at some risk. And that's why I spoke on behalf of the article. That's why Senator Metzen offered the amendment yesterday in Senator Michelle's committee. And to now, and nobody's even bothered to talk to me about the deletion of this. I didn't hear from you, Senator Rosen, relative to that. I heard about it through second and third party hearsay. The person who mentioned it to me was at the outset of the committee hearing, was the chair before we started. It doesn't necessarily surprise me, but I didn't have the courtesy of being told that this article would be removed. So, Senator Rosen, I've historically not been involved with stadium debates, but I'll tell you, I'm not bad at counting votes. I've done that pretty well over the years, and I don't know that you got 34 votes for this bill. You've got 37 people in your caucus. Maybe you've got the votes in the caucus. I would expect there would be some equity for St. Paul, and I appreciate that, you know, we've got that $1.3 million scattered over there, but as you can tell from my arithmetic, I've included the $1.3 million, and we still come out at 5%. Madam Chair, I just feel very, very strongly that this article should remain in the bill. I've asked Mayor Coleman, and I have to indicate also parenthetically, Madam Chair, having offered my perspective on Mayor Ryback and his role, I've watched a lot of combination of mayors between St. Paul and Minneapolis, and I think Mayor Coleman would agree with me relative to Mayor Ryback, and I would also say to both mayors that they have worked together in ways that I have not seen the mayors work together. So I think the same is true of Mayor Coleman as well. But I know Senator Rosen would like to address this, but I would like Mayor Coleman to have the opportunity to address this as well.
Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Senator DeCone. First, my apologies for not telling you that this was coming out. I do think that is a courtesy that should be extended, and unfortunately that courtesy was not given to me yesterday. I did not know until I came to the hearing yesterday that that was an amendment that was going to go on, or that there was an amendment. In fact, we have asked, and this is the honest to gosh truth. I've been asked repeatedly what would St. Paul want, repeatedly over and over again, and not till the night before did I get a little spreadsheet of a few ideas and how much it was going to cost. And I honestly, Senator Cohen, believe that once you saw the spreadsheet and you saw how this amendment that went on yesterday puts the entire spreadsheet in balance, it's not balanced anymore, we have to do something with that, and that's what we have to do. I have to be protective of this bill and of this project going forward. I understand your frustration. I really do. I do and I don't, because I live out, I'm not from Minnesota, and I'm not from the Twin Cities. But I have given you my commitment to continue to work going forward. I would like to get you and the two mayors, who I highly respect, in a room to figure something out that would be equitable. But to put this bill in jeopardy and in imbalance would be just disrespectful. And we just absolutely can't do it. Obviously, I have supported the St. Paul in many ways. The amendment that was tried to put on in jobs yesterday, the St. Paul Saints. I'm a co-author of that. So I have been trying to figure out something that we can do that would be agreeable by all people going forward. And that's how we got to this point with this bill. It has to be agreed upon by everybody to move this forward. But this amendment actually takes it all apart, and this funding to St. Paul's takes it all apart. So I, again, give you my commitment that we will work together, and I apologize that you did not know that this was going to come off, but I think basically that same courtesy should be given to us. We should have been, the author of the House and the Senate should have been pulled into some meetings to say, okay, what can we do about this, instead of giving a piece of paper the night before and saying this is what we want. And that's how it played out.
Thank you, Mayor Coleman.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I do appreciate Senator Rosen's efforts to include some additional resources for the City of St. Paul to move forward some projects that we believe are critical. It is not sufficient given the amount of money that even if you were to take a Saint Stadium, which we have tried to keep out of the discussions relative to the Vikings, because we believe it's more appropriate for a bonding bill, but even that $1.3 million would be less than half of the debt service on the state portion of a facility in Lower Town for the regional ballpark. But we do appreciate the effort. However, having said that, I do want to debunk the notion that somehow I'm trying to suggest that we take money out of downtown Minneapolis and put it into downtown St. Paul through their sales tax. This is about the state portion of the investment, as Senator Cohen has outlined so clearly. If you look at the numbers over the years, there has been a tremendous amount of money on the state's, by the state, invested into downtown Minneapolis. And where the state chooses to invest its money helps change and shape development patterns. And so some of the traffic that you see directed into downtown Minneapolis is a direct result of state investments, whether that was for the money that was invested in the convention center about 10 years ago that freed up the additional capacity to build the expansion and attract more conventions and more vibrancy, or any number of investments, TCF Stadium, the $25 million a year that's going in to that facility from state resources. And the City of St. Paul hasn't been treated equally on that. We're not asking for direct parity. We're not asking for dollar to dollar, but we are asking for enough resources for us to be able to remain competitive, for the XL Energy Center to continue to be one of the top-performing facilities of its kind in the country, for the Minnesota Wild to be able to be competitive, for our River Center facility to be competitive, and for us to be able to be a twin of the Twin Cities that has economic vitality and economic vibrancy. As I suggested yesterday, if you feed one twin and you starve the other, one of them's going to die. They don't both succeed. All the discussion that has been had in this room about the importance of investment, the importance of the Vikings, I firmly believe in that. I believe in this region as one of the greatest regions, one of the strongest regions, certainly in the country, if not in the entire world. That's why efforts like Greater MSP are going to be successful in attracting companies and jobs from across the country and across the globe. But if we do that at the expense of St. Paul, then this region and the state of Minnesota suffers. I want to be very clear, too. I put a proposal out a year ago that very specifically directed a Viking stadium into downtown Minneapolis. The funding mechanism was a 2-cent a drink sales tax. I understand that that didn't go anywhere, but at the same time, I am supportive of a Viking stadium in downtown Minneapolis that takes advantage of the infrastructure that is already existing in that, and that helps continue to move the creativity or the vitality of downtown Minneapolis. But it can't come at the expense of St. Paul. And the bill as currently situated is a very direct threat to the future vitality of the facilities that we, as the city of St. Paul, have invested in and worked very, very hard to support. So I believe that the amendment to take out what was added yesterday I stand against that. I think that it is. There are ways to make these numbers work in a way that does not disrupt the bill. And at the end of the day, this is about getting additional support for this bill, getting members of the St. Paul delegation, as I've had conversations as recently or as late as Monday morning, to be very clear, let's go forward, let's figure out a way that we can bring some votes to this discussion, and we can get something that the delegation from the city of St. Paul can live with, and let's move all of these projects forward. This is about getting things done, but getting things done in a way that doesn't harm one city at the to the benefit of another.
Madam Chair.
Senator Langseth.
Well, Madam Chair, I've been involved in the bonding committee for a long time, and I had some problems with the Saints ballpark coming out of GO bonds. And I had suggested to people that they somehow hook onto the Viking Stadium. And I guess what I had in mind at the time is something like a Racino, which would overshoot the mark that was needed for the debt service, and that be used for the St. Stadium. I realize that isn't the case here now. But I would really like to see something worked out so that the St. Stadium could be funded in some way, probably other than GO bonds. And I was encouraged that Senator Rosen said she'd like to work with St. Paul in the future on this. I'm going to vote to keep the article in. I would hope that at some point we can work out something. I always thought that forgiveness of the no-interest loan to the city of St. Paul is something that probably should have been forgiven. And I'm just kind of wondering if that could be part of it to help free up money for St. Paul to be able to fund the St. Stadium. I realize that's in here, but I would just hope that we could be looking at some way that we could bring about a little bit of equity here in the future.
Thank you, Senator Langseth. And I don't think that there's a lot of members with a bit of discomfort already with the costs and the revenues, but by adding to the costs, it's not going to help their comfort level. And so if people were willing to figure out a way to inject more revenue into this and would actually vote for it, we could do a lot of other things. I have a good idea of how that could be done, but I know that the St. Paul delegation is by and large not supportive of that. But anyway, Senator Bonner.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mayor Coleman and the working group, we did spend a lot of time, and one of the things that we agreed on as a working group that we should have an overarching commission that would schedule events at either facilities to make sure that we were not in a situation where we were bidding against ourselves regionally. That's something that if I am blessed to be back here next session, I would like to work on and make sure that you are not hurt by this bill. Because I'm on the working group, I am have some concerns around adding this to this formula. I have supported additional revenue with various bills that have come forward and would support those additional revenue vehicles, but without that, then I am concerned. And then the last question is the amount that is in the bill for St. Paul, that $26 million, I believe, is that for the St. Paul Saints Stadium? Does that help you in that way?
Senator Coleman.
Mayor Coleman. Mayor Coleman.
No, thank you.
Yes. Mayor Coleman.
Thank you. That I appreciate. Madam Chair and Senator Bono, thank you very much. The issue relative to the management structure, I think, is critical. I do think that we have to get out of the uber-competitive situation that only advantages promoters and others that choose to do that. I would suggest, by the way, though, that I think that the addition of another venue of the nature of the new Viking Stadium actually exacerbates the competitive nature of that, because right now, if you're Lady Gaga or Madonna, you come in and you do two nights at one of the arenas as opposed to one night at the rebuilt stadium, and I think it's going to make it even more difficult for the facilities that we currently have. So that is going to have to continue to be an issue and one that needs to be addressed. But the fundamental question here today, I believe, and has been over a period of years, is the state investment in the core cities that make up the Twin Cities that allow us to be the vibrant region that we are. And when we continue to move investment in one direction, it comes at the cost of the other side of the equation. And that, I think, is the fundamental question. And so management structures relative to the arenas is important, but it doesn't address the shaping of where people go, how they go there, and ultimately, and I think this is the fundamental question, how do we as a city continue to move forward to try to attract companies to come into our town? When we went out and we tried to recruit Cray Computer to form to bring their business into downtown St. Paul, and have been very, very successful, by the way, the thing that they looked to locate their businesses was vitality. They looked to the new bars and restaurants. They looked to the Jazz Fest. They looked at the opportunity of a regional ballpark. They looked at the investment in light rail, and they said, this is a place that we will be able to recruit across the globe for top-level talent to come and work for our very high-tech firm. If we don't continue to invest in St. Paul, then our ability to attract those types of jobs diminishes. I think we are better as a region. Our strength is in the fact that we have two great cities that continue to grow and have the capacity to attract families and talent and businesses. But right now, this bill as proposed makes it very, very difficult for the long-term vitality and future of the city of St. Paul vis-a-vis downtown Minneapolis.
Answers no.
Madam Chair.
Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to make clear that this amendment deletes the $43 million that was appropriated for 2014 to retire the loans issued in 1993 for the River Center, and also cancels $34.75 million in loan repayments that St. Paul is scheduled to make in the state for fiscal years 2012 through 2020. And, Madam Chair, I'm not sure how you feel, but I know Mayor Ryback just has a couple of comments that he'd like to
make. You know, Senator Rosen, I want to get out of the squabble. You know, we could bring up a lot of squabbles. Arden Hills would be happy to have this stadium. Shakopee would be happy to have this stadium.
Right.
And so I don't know how we get into this tiff between St. Paul, who doesn't have a proposal on the table, in Minneapolis. And I just would like to take a vote on this amendment, because we have to move this bill forward. Enough of the squabble.
Madam Chair, I agree. And again, I reinstate my commitment to try to figure out something that is reasonable.
Very quickly.
Senator Cohen, very quickly.
Very quickly. You know, I hear from Senator Rosen that she wants to help, and I think she says that in all sincerity. But the reason this amendment was offered by Senator Metzen yesterday, the reason I oppose taking it out today, is because we hear these offers of help somewhere out there. But what we know is that the history has been that there has not been the help. The St. Paul proposal relative to the ballpark is not in anybody's bonding bill. It's in the governor's bill. We know that what I had attempted to do in the state Senate over the last several years was stopped when it got to the governor, Governor Plenty, I think stopped by members of the majority caucus. So when I hear talk about, we'd like to help, you know, I just am not quite sure when that help's going to come and what shape St. Paul will be in when that help finally does come.
On the motion to delete the line 1.36 of the A-109 amendment.
Madam Chair, I don't think you're deleting it. I think you're adopting it.
division.
Oh, whether or not we adopt it, you're right, Senator Higgins.
No, you were right the first time.
But it would actually delete. It would delete the projects.
Yeah,
so
delete Section 8.
So voting for it would mean that we would delete Section 8. Voting against it.
Article 8.
Voting against it leaves it in. So all in favor of deleting Article 8.
Could you make that very clear again? Have council do that.
Senator Ingebrigtsen, if you want some help from me, I'll help you.
if you vote for it, you will delete Article 8, which is what was put in the Jobs Committee yesterday relating to St. Paul. And if you vote against it, then it would stay in. So all in favor of the amendment to delete Article 8, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. All opposed, nay.
No.
I believe the ayes have it.
Division.
Division has been called. All in favor of deleting Article 8, raise their hand. With 8 members having voted for it, that is the majority. The article is deleted. And now on the rest of the amendment. So lines 1.1 through 1.35, all in favor?
Madam Chair, with the deletion of 15 and 16.
Oh, that's correct. We were going to, as an amended. So, Mr. Bodden, do you want to repeat that, basically what it is?
Madam Chair, what the committee has before it then is page 1, lines 1 through 35 of the amendment, with the exception of lines 15 and 16.
All in favor of the A109 amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. All opposed, nay. The motion does prevail. The amendment is adopted.
I have amendments.
Madam Chair, could I just do one amendment for Senator Tomasoni?
Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is just to get it in the shape that he'd like to have it. Madam Chair, I have the A108.
I'm leaving.
Required.
I guess this is U.S. Steel, which is already in here somewhere.
Oh.
Jenny Engel.
Would someone like to offer that amendment? Senator Newman offers the A108 amendment. Senator Rosen, would you explain it?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. This is for Senator Tomasoni. We had a pretty good discussion yesterday about the use of the stadium in the Minnesota Amateur Sports Commission. He was asking for an appropriation of $2 million per year to go to the commission. And my reply is, we don't have $2 million. Can we just get this figured out before we start appropriating money out and about? But he does. He would like to see that on lines, page 71.21, the commission must negotiate in good faith and then scratch everything after that until for the time it uses the stadium. And I think that's good. And we talked about it, and we will continue to work on this issue for him. He's on the commission, Madam Chair, members, and he felt strongly about this. So,
any further discussion on that amendment? If not, all in favor of the A108 amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. The motion does prevail. The amendment is adopted. Senator Higgins.
Madam Chair, I have the A113 amendment. And I'll start talking about it while it's being passed out, if that's okay. Looking
Please
at
do.
The clock. This would delete the city contribution and the state contribution that are in this bill and replace them with a nickel a drink beverage tax. This raises approximately $25 million a year per penny. So we would have plenty of money to pay for the stadium being built in about 5 or 6 years with the money coming in. After that, it would pay for the operating expenses without having to go through the machinations we have in here. Then I also have in here that there will be excess funds raised, and so the money then could also be appropriated to the city for the Target Center and to St. Paul to fund repairs and upgrades of the X, and to other cities for capital expenditures for projects of a regional significance throughout the state.
Are there questions? Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Higgins, how much money would be generated totally per year?
Senator Higgins?
Madam Chair, Senator Ingebrigtsen, $25 million per penny, and this is a nickel a drink, so $125 million a year.
Thank you.
Which could fund a lot of things that we've been fighting about over here on that table for a while.
It's great.
Right, Madam Chair.
Senator Rosen.
That's a lot of money, Senator Higgins. That's a chunk of money. Tempted. However, the agreement from the working group that worked on the stadium bill altogether was that we would choose charitable expansion of charitable gaming, and so I'd have to ask for your support in opposing this and to live within those parameters that we set with the working group.
Any further discussion on the A113 amendment? If not, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, nay.
Nay.
Madam Chair.
The motion does not prevail. Senator Hand.
For the A-112 amendment.
It was my best effort.
I thought you had it.
I thought I had it.
It's got nothing for you.
Madam Chair, if you like, I could begin to talk about this as it's being distributed.
Can we come back?
No,
Senator Hand.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, this goes back to the early discussion we had today about the bonding provision in the bill and the discussion about the differences between general obligation and appropriation bonds. And I asked Ms. James if she would, at the conclusion of that discussion, draft an amendment that would change the bonding to be general obligation rather than appropriation. And, of course, coming out of that discussion, it seems to me that if we're going to do this, the general obligation bonds are of lower cost. It seems that with the appropriation structure, the state is going to be obligated to pay the costs of this over the period of the loan. I think this just makes it clear, but if we're going to do it, it certainly would save us money. And so, Madam Chair, I believe, and I'll have to trust Senate Counsel's drafting of this, but I think this accomplishes the purpose of changing that, and only that, doesn't change any other provision of the bill except that the bonding would be general obligation rather than appropriation.
Madam Chair.
Senator Langston.
I'm wondering if this wouldn't have some negative effect on the bond rating of the state. So, I do think this is a bad idea.
I'm wondering if Commissioner Showalter might want to address this issue.
This would pretty much eat up our bond.
Commissioner Showalter. Commissioner.
To the amendment and the general obligation
versus appropriation bonds. As mentioned earlier, there are differences both in the uses, the tax treatment, and sort of the agreements that can go with it. Since our earlier conversation and earlier testimony, we've been in contact with the bond lawyer, bond counsel, basically to understand some of those issues better, anticipating this discussion. They would include some of the use agreements that this stadium authority would have with the Vikings, also the terms of that agreement with a geo bonds limited to 20 years. I believe the Vikings lease for 40 years probably would be also quite problematic.
Madam Chair.
Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And we did have a significant discussion about this in the working group, and as I said, brought in Commissioner Schulwalter, Commissioner Franz, and their teams about this. And it was decided to use the appropriation bonds. We felt that was better just because of the legality issues and the other issues that come around, the other revenue sources. But right now, as I understand it, GOs are 2.76% at 20-year, and appropriation bonds, if let right now, could be about 3.1. So that's still a very, very good deal, appropriation bonds. And so I would ask to, that you oppose this amendment.
Senator Newman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Commissioner, could you give me an estimate as to the difference or the savings to the state between the 2.76% and the 3.1%?
Commissioner Schulwalter.
Madam Chair, Senator, off the top of my head, I don't have that information. I can give you, a ballpark. It will be tens of millions of dollars, certainly, over the life of the bonds.
Thank you.
That's fine, Commissioner. Thank you.
But it would be 20 years.
20 years.
Would be a 20-year bond.
Right.
Madam Chair, that's right.
Which would increase the cost significantly per year for payment.
That is right.
Any other discussion on the amendment? If not, all in favor of the A112 amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay.
No.
No. The motion does not prevail.
Madam Chair.
Senator Higgins, I think we're going to recess. I don't know. I don't know how many more amendments are out there.
I have three.
You have three. So we are going to recess until 2 o'clock. I believe the Senate will wait for us because there are a number of members who want to go to the funeral. And
Madam Chair.
Senator.
Madam Chair, I was just going to say my understanding is we are going to gavel in at 1 and then we are going to recess till 2:30. So okay. I don't know if that helps in your planning.
So if we come back at 2, we have another half hour. I don't know if that will be adequate. If people don't go out and write more amendments, we'll be okay. But do remember, this will be referred to the tax committee, so this isn't the last stop before the floor. But with that, the committee will recess until 2:00.